It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. A great show for you. Everybody's in studio. Harry McCracken, the Technologizer, Jason Snell from Six Colors, and our own Becky Worley. We're going to have a great time talking about the latest tech news. Stay tuned. A great Twit is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. Hi, everybody. It's time for our annual audience survey. We'd really like to hear from you. It helps us understand our audience better, know what you like and don't like, how you listen to the show. It also helps us tell advertisers what kind of people listen. But I promise you, your feedback is always kept personally anonymous. All you have to do is visit twit.tv/survey and let us know what you think. It'll just take a few minutes, and it'll help us make Twit even better. We really appreciate your support and any help you can give us. twit.tv/survey. This is Twit This Week in Tech, episode 552, recorded Sunday, March 6th, 2016. Then they came for the oatmeal. This Week in Tech is brought to you by FreshBooks, the super simple cloud accounting software that's giving thousands of freelancers and small businesses the tools to save time billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/twit. And by Wealthfront. Wealthfront is a low-cost automated investment service and the most sophisticated way to invest your money. Whether you've got millions or you're just starting out, visit Wealthfront.com/twit. And sign up to get your free personalized investment portfolio. That's wealthfront.com/twit. And by IT Pro TV. Enhance your technology aptitude. IT Pro TV is the resource to keep your IT skills up to date with engaging and informative video tutorials. For a free 7-day trial and 30% off the life of your account, go to itpro.tv/twit and use the code TWIT30. And by Audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter. User ID audible_com. It's time for Twit This Week in Tech. The show where we give you the latest tech news. And it's going to be one of those shows. We have, it happens rarely, but once in a while, a show where everyone's in studio. Mm-hmm. And when we find everyone in studio, we like to ply them with liquor to loosen up the conversation. Becky Worley is here. She's the queen of liquor plying.
Well, I always bring you a bottle. So I've brought you a bottle of nice red wine. Oh, I don't think we can add on to these beautiful old fashions. I once told you and John Dvorak that I liked my wine that tasted like the bug spray off. I finally realized it's minerality. Is what I actually like. Leo, I'm grown up now. It's all happened.
It's minerality, yes. A.K.A. bug spray.
And one more bottle for you.
You did open that up, so we'll have that later.
Yes, we will. In honor of the Salt Lake. Southwest.
Were you in Austin?
I was not, but I thought that we should commemorate it. I have a whole case at home. So
I love the Salt Lake barbecue in Austin, as I know everybody else does, and South By is coming up.
We'll talk about it.
Thank you so much. Becky Worley, of course, from ABC's Good Morning America, Yahoo News.
Not anymore.
Yeah.
Aww. Were you laid off with the rest?
No, that was just sort of a long rollout
long
of
fade.
Layoff. Long fade. But that's my third one, so I'll be back.
Also with us, Harry McCracken, king of the long fade. Technologizer.
Wow.
No, that's a mean thing to say.
I don't even know what that means.
I don't know what it means either.
It's
from Fast Company. No, you shouldn't be. That's a dumb thing to say. It has nothing to do with you. It's actually Jason Snell.
King of the long fade.
I'm more of Prince of the long fade.
Prince of the long fade.
So, hi there.
From sixcolors.com. It's great. Three of my favorite people. This is going to be a lot of fun. I don't even know if there's news to talk about. Who cares? Who cares? We've got old fashions.
Just raise a glass.
Later, we're going to have
raise
some
a glass to freedom.
We're all starting sober.
Clink. Thanks that to Anthony Nielsen,
crime.
Our brilliant editor, who is apparently also
clink.
A mixologist. Look at he put the maraschino cherries with the orange twist kind of as an S curve throughout.
That I is, know, it's beautiful.
That is good, too. That is a nice bourbon.
And I asked him what he sweetened. Yeah, we have Woodford Reserve. I asked him what he sweetened with. What did he say? Sour gum?
Syrup.
Gum syrup?
Gum syrup.
You have everything.
Is that made from sorghum?
Yeah, you squeeze it out of chewing gum.
Ooh. Not ABC.
Wrigley's.
Yep. Wow. Drink up.
Actually, if anybody's
Mr. Wrigley made
by the way,
fortune.
If anybody's king of the long fade, it would be me. So don't take that personally. I'm fading as we speak.
Nah, we're all holding on.
Hey, a sad note. We'll start off with a sad note. The man who invented the at sign, Ray Tomlinson, passed this weekend. He was 74. He had a heart attack. He was way back at the days of the earliest days of the internet at Bolt, Beranek, and Newman. They were
never
the,
heard of that before.
In Cambridge.
Yeah, they were the consultant that ARPA went to help them create this thing called the internet, BBN. And he was there, and they were looking for a way to indicate email. And he suggested the at sign, separating the username from the host name. You need to do that because you could have duplicate usernames and you could have duplicate host names, but in theory you'd have a unique username at host name. And the at sign is a perfect, people beautiful way to do it.
People who did not live life before the internet don't realize that it used to be you only saw the at sign on, like, apples at the supermarket for, like, two, you know,
it was a price.
12 at $2 each or something like that.
Right.
That was about the only place you ever saw it. It was an archaic symbol that is now, like, super important to everything we do on the internet.
It's really the only guy up there on the top row above your numbers that isn't used for anything.
But you know, email.
It was a perfect choice.
Not dollar sign, not percent. Well, in fact, I remember, I'm trying to remember the lore. You might remember better, Harry, but I remember there were other symbols proposed. I don't know if it was a fight, but it wasn't an automatic that the at sign would be selected. Now it seems like, of course.
So natural. And it took a long time before we all knew about it, of course, because even though we invented it in 1971, for the longest time, if you were on America Online, you could only send email to other people on America Online.
And there was no at sign.
And it wasn't, there was no need for it because you were on AOL. So it wasn't until the early 90s that kind of normal consumers who were not academics or involved in the government got access to it.
Yeah, MCI mail, you just had a number, CompuServe.
CompuServe, number.
Who remembers their CompuServe number?
720-75-740.
I
remember my password.
6,3135.
You know, actually, CompuServe had really good passwords because they had weird words separated by symbols, and that was actually, it turns out, that's a pretty good password. My one password, the password manager I use, just added a feature where you can have a certain number of words in a chain separated by symbols. And I thought, oh, great, CompuServe passwords, they're back.
That's password padding, basically. That's what Steve Gibson's calls the idea of bringing that symbol in.
Exactly. And they're more memorable that way. And that's why I can remember my CompuServe password from 1983 or whenever.
That's interesting. The
you guys
at
aren't
sign,
dating yourselves or anything.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Well, somebody's got to date us.
Carbon date us.
The at sign is called the Appenstaatje in Dutch for monkey's tail. Mm-hmm. In Danish, it's the elephant's trunk, or schnabel. Hmm. In Finnish, it's the kissant, or cat's tail. German, klammeraffe, or hanging monkey.
When was it invented?
Well, there's actually some debate over it. Some think it's a symbol for the amphora, which was a unit of measurement, the terracotta jars that they were used in the Greek times. They can trace it back to the 16th century, a Florentine trader who used the at sign in his books. Others say the monks did it because they were lazy and they were trying to reduce the number of strokes. So instead of writing out AT, they would write A and with a little curly Q. So history doesn't tell us where it began.
Well, it's serendipitous because it has the right meaning at, you know, user at host, but also that it wasn't used. Or that it
right.
wasn't in
it was
common
no,
usage. It's
no
perfect.
Competition, yeah.
And it's QWERTY. Was it always up there?
I think
the
it was always on the... I remember it on my typewriter keyboards,
I have to call my dad. He was Smith Corona. That's where he worked at the time.
That's right. He's from Smith Corona. He didn't just use one.
He worked there.
He was one.
It gives you hope that the tilde or the caret may someday become useful.
Right.
I'm trying to find, the history of using the at sign in email. I remember there were some issues. I feel like it had a use in you. There were some lesser uses in Unix or something as a. Oh, I know. Maybe it was APL or one of those weird programming languages.
Yeah, programming languages adopted it too.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, in the early days of the computer, they were just looking at the keyboard like we need more symbols, right? Let's use, what can we use this for? I remember learning BASIC and how the dollar sign to me came to represent string variables because AppleSoft BASIC, it was, you know, set name string to whatever, and the string was the dollar sign. So it'll always be that for me. Every symbol possible that could be used for a programming language or anything like that was used in the 70s. They were like every part of the buffalo, you know?
Yeah.
It's like every part of the keyboard was used by those systems.
Everything but the squeal. Ray also helped standardize the from field, the subject field. You had to have a to field.
And he invented email.
He basically made email.
It wasn't just the at sign. It was everything.
So next time you use email, tip an old-fashioned to Ray Tomlinson, the godfather of email. Passed away at the age of 74.
I found a strange segue from the story of his passing to the big story that's been the story of the year so far, which is Apple versus the FBI, which is, I think, what a lot of people came to this week, is that this is going to mandate a certain level of government development to come up with their own technological solutions, and that's going to be an infrastructure. And there's just going to be huge cost associated with getting the government up to speed. And it made me think of the investment that the government made in ARPANET and DARPANET, and that we haven't seen anything of that scale since.
You really think that that's what is called for, is kind of a moonshot to solve this problem?
Let's just put it this way. I just backed us into it. Let's start at the beginning and see if we can get there. I saw the big picture in it. And then I realized, let's do the news and let's get there, because I think that's the opinion that's got to come out of this.
We don't need to, of course, go back through the whole tawdry story. We will finally hear the court's decision on the 22nd, which is 2 weeks from Tuesday. But it won't be the end of it, because whichever way it goes, in the Department of Justice's favor or Apple's favor, there will be an appeal, no doubt. It'll end up with the Supreme Court if they choose to take the case.
And it goes through the Ninth Circuit first, right?
Yeah, it's okay. Got a ways to go. It's only with a magistrate right now. But I think this is the question that I would say is the real question. Should there be in our lives somewhere so private that only we can look at it? Do we as people deserve to have it? And focusing on the smartphone maybe is kind of misleading. Should we as people have somewhere we can put stuff that nobody, including law enforcement, can look at?
We have that. It's called our brains.
Yeah, it already exists as a space that's protected.
But it holds so little, in my case. and it's unfortunately flawed in its ability to recollect perfectly.
A smartphone is an extension to your brain.
If this were an extension of the brain, do you think it deserves that kind of protection?
Chris Vance, who spoke at the congressional hearings on behalf of all the state and local DAs, he said that hundreds of years of jurisprudence have given us the view that no vessel, no safe, no home is exempt from a warrant.
Except your brain.
Except your brain.
So that's an interesting question. So nobody's proposing. I hope they don't. You know what? They're not proposing it because they don't have the technology. Let's let's go forward in time, 20 years, when the technology exists to read your mind. And law enforcement says then, well, there's stuff in there. If we could read your mind, we'd know if you were guilty or not. OJ, if we could read OJ's mind, we wouldn't have to have a trial. We'd just find out. And then they say to whoever is the Apple of the 22nd century, can you get us in there?
Why is that any different from a polygraph?
Should they be allowed to do that? Well, polygraph's not admissible in court to this day because it's imperfect.
They're not very reliable.
It's imperfect.
Okay.
Let's say you could do a perfect mind read. We're talking to the Supreme Court of 2050. I'd say no. I think that's a
self-incrimination, line too far. Isn't it?
But that's what the Fifth Amendment protects you against, right?
So okay.
So I think that was a good point to make, Harry, because if this is an extension of the brain, if a smartphone is an extension of the brain, should it have those protections? Should it be private or not?
Well, arguing against my own case, I mean, pen and paper have always been extensions of the brain, too. It's just that it's way harder to lock up pen and paper than it is.
Yeah, we're here because technology has given us a way to take the part of our brain and put it somewhere and have it be invisible.
And technology is almost but not quite there.
It isn't, by the way, and that's another story here, which is that the FBI, if they wanted to, probably could hack that 5C. Jonathan Zdarsky, who is probably, there's probably no one more expert on iOS forensics, is of the opinion, yeah, you know what, there's ways. If they really wanted to, they don't want to. They want to establish a precedent. So let's not talk about that 5C. That's not the important point. The important point is, do we deserve, do we need something except for our brain, besides our brain, that we can keep to ourselves private, including keep it away from law enforcement? And you're right. Historically, law enforcement, with appropriate court authority, has had access to everything but our brain. Is that right? Is that accurate?
And our spouses... Like, you can't, I mean, in terms of the self-incrimination
thing. Yeah, that's a good point. Spouse's brain.
Yeah, it's a really novel argument to suggest, and I wonder if somebody will argue this at some point, that this is part of the right to not self-incriminate and that the smartphone is an extension of your brain. I love that argument, too. I'm not sure that it would actually ever work, but I like the idea because how my wife's iPhone broke yesterday, and she drove somewhere today to pick up my son, and she said, you know, I'm out there and thinking, I'm an adult, I can do this without a phone, but we have offloaded so much of this work to our phones, and so I think that's an interesting argument. It seems unlikely to me that anybody's ever going to go for it, but
I like that.
I agree.
Thank
with
you,
that.
Harry.
It's more of an ethical argument
that.
Than a legal one.
But it is. We're not talking law here, and of course that's why the law makes interesting provisions, like the wife. If you're just my girlfriend, you can incriminate me. But if you're my wife, you can't. That's just the law saying, kind of carving out where those lines are against self-incrimination.
But at the very
least,
we're
not talking about law. We're talking about ethics. We're talking about principle.
Well, and the existence of a safe space. The very existence of what somebody called a warrant-proof place, where there was a piece linked to, John Gruber linked to it from Daring Fireball about this matter. And somebody said, do we really think we want to have a place that's warrant-proof? And the answer is that place exists already. It's in our minds. It's not a novel concept. Not everywhere is reachable, or should it be reachable, by law enforcement.
It's like Steve Jobs said, the computer is a bicycle for the mind, and that's even more true of smartphones than it ever was of PCs.
I think this is much more interesting conversation than the nitty-gritty of the decryption that we've been going through for the last few weeks. And it's not obvious. I don't think, you know, you can, if you're a technologist, people yell at me for saying, well, there's more to this than just, yes, we should have encryption. There's lots to talk about. And people get mad at me for not just, you know, defending the right to encryption. But I do think it's a larger discussion. And when you kind of eliminate it from this kind of technical discussion, but say, is there somewhere else besides your brain that should be private? That's a tougher question to answer.
Just to play devil's advocate on this, though, it's much more than a receptacle. It's a transmission device.
Right.
It's a knowledge center. So I think it's much more complicated than that. If you said, I have my personal hard drive, that is the extension of my memory, and that is a separate being, it's like, you know, there's a lot about separation in that that may play into that
mm-hmm.
metaphor.
Mm-hmm.
Although, I mean, our knowledge base and our brain, but if we say something, it's admissible, right? And that's our transmission device. I can make that argument.
Right, but
they
can't
force
you
to give up your password, but they can force you to give up a hair for a DNA sample
or a fingerprint to unlock
your phone.
Yeah.
I think you could make a pretty strong case that this is separate. This is distinct from your brain. This is your phone. It's not your brain.
No.
The fact that you willingly put all your brain stuff in there doesn't somehow give it some special protection.
Right. It's your own choice.
You chose to do that. I would argue that for purposes of law enforcement, this shouldn't, the smartphone should not be somehow specially protected.
Okay, so then what I think evolved...
I think your brain should be protected. I don't, in this 2050 scenario, hypothetical, I think I would be horrified if they said, oh no, they can read your mind and find out if you're guilty. That would be horrific. I think we'll probably come to that day sometime.
Can they compel you to take an x-ray or do anything like that?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's not deemed that your body can incriminate you. So giving your fingerprint or a DNA sample or an x-ray is not considered currently by our courts as self-incrimination. That's the testimony of your thumb.
Okay.
And that's admissible, oddly enough. But that's all artificial. We've carved these rules.
Fortunately, encrypting things that the government can't get to is not illegal at this point. The issue is the government wants the manufacturers of systems that use encryption to have ways to get in so that it's not just between you and your device, but that there's a third party involved, which is the manufacturer or the government.
That's making it illegal to have encryption from a practical point of view. Right?
Well, I mean, I think what would happen if they made it illegal for Apple to make an encrypted iPhone that Apple couldn't break into at the behest of the government would be that all the people who do have something that they're plotting, like terrorists and other criminals, would switch to third-party software that could be compiled using known encryption and would be encrypted in a way that Apple couldn't get at. I mean, they would just move the game somewhere else. It would be everybody else that's left with the third-party broken encryption.
If encryption is criminal, then only criminals will have encryption.
It's kind of what Tim Cook was saying in his interview with ABC is I'm not trying to protect the terrorist. Bad guys will always have ways to do this effectively. I'm trying to protect the average person. Apple's job is to protect to put these tools in the hands of normal people who aren't sophisticated technically.
And it's pretty remarkable that the bad guys have not all switched to the most bulletproof possible.
They're not too bright. That's why they're bad guys. Really.
They're not organized enough.
That's one of the things law enforcement always tells me is, you know, I say, well, what if somebody has strong encryption and a password? They say, you know what? Most of the time they just tell us their password.
Right?
Crooks, for the most part, what law enforcement deals with is not such bright crooks. And if somebody is very sophisticated, and unfortunately that tends to be terrorists, you know, the ISIS types, if they're that sophisticated, it's pretty hard to deal with. Took us how long to get Osama bin Laden because he was smart enough to cut himself off from the internet.
Well,
would only deal with a courier.
And because we made it public that they were tracking him with his satellite phone, and so he went dark on satellite phones.
Right.
Which, again, has a parallel here, which is if we say Apple has the, you know, backdoor key. I said I wasn't going to say backdoor, I did it. If Apple has this key, then that tells terrorists or organized criminals to go use different platforms, GPG.
Yeah.
I have a question. I didn't know if you guys could answer this. So I thought it was really interesting this week, the conversation about that Apple does have the ability to absolutely provide single access to individual devices with keys that are individual to the devices themselves. This was Steve Gibson's whole thing about the individual number is generated by the phone.
His point was that if Apple made a revised firmware, it would be signed for that one phone and that one phone only.
Right.
That the signing that Apple does with firmware entangles, I think that's the term Apple uses, their key, their special crypto key with a unique identifier of the phone so that that firmware is unique to that phone.
Right.
And so his position was Apple could make a modified firmware that would only be usable on that 5C.
And that's burned into the boot ROM, right?
Yeah.
So my question is that in the OS or in the hardware manufacturer?
It's
of the
in
phone?
The secure enclave.
So.
That's hardware.
So that means that if the phones were made by Huawei or made by HTC, that if we extend this beyond Apple, that it's the hardware makers that have to do this.
Right. In fact, it was Jonathan Zdarsky's point that one way to do this would be to actually physically copy the contents of the chip on the phone from one. I'm not sure exactly. I mean, he's smarter than I am, but I'm not sure exactly how he's proposing to do this. But
You mean to create a mirror of the hard drive?
He said.
And just keep replicating it as you try and crack the.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
In other words, exactly right. You could continue to try it. It wouldn't worry if it erased itself after 10 tries because you have a copy of it.
Right.
It's still encrypted.
My question about the
other thing is, by the way, let's point out your iCloud is not safe because Apple has the keys, period.
Yes.
And Apple's point,
already a third party in the middle.
Apple's point was, if they had just let the thing back up, we could have given you the information. In fact, I think that's going to be Apple's strongest defense in the end is that the FBI screwed up. It seemed to be in the testimony in Congress that Congress was upset the FBI had screwed up.
Yeah, that didn't go as well as the FBI thought it was going to go.
No, it did not. Some tough questions from Daryl Issa and others. But Congress seemed upset that, wait a minute, you're putting this burden on Apple because you didn't do the right thing? Well, that kind of lets Apple off the hook. It unfortunately also kicks the can down the road of this big issue.
Yeah,
it doesn't it, though.
Should there be
their
encryption.
Perfect test case has been corrupted.
And there is this whole fascinating question of the government telling companies that have done nothing wrong, here, you need to create this solution for us, whether that is legal.
Right. There's the argument that Apple, if this became standard procedure, then every law enforcement group around the world would be going to Apple and asking for Apple engineers to write software to access Apple hardware. And at what point do you, not to make a slippery slope argument, but how many employees does Apple need to pay to do the work of law enforcement in order to be in business selling phones?
And what happens when China gets upset over something involving free speech?
Well, yeah, Apple's right to say this is a bad idea from a purely business point of view.
Okay, so let's go back to my original premise that this is the moonshot. So Susan Landau, who testified before Congress, she said the biggest problem with asking Apple to create their own internal compliance to unlock the thousands of phones that are in the judicial backlog is that anyone who's involved in compliance, be it ADA compliance, tax compliance, they know that this becomes the smallest priority in the company's budgeting. It's something they have to do. It has no benefit to the company. It's just a compulsion. Therefore, you get low-level employees. They start...
and they're more likely to give you up.
It's the easiest one for organized crime, for state-sponsored terrorists, or for corporate espionage to get in there and get that key.
What's the moonshot? So, they're saying government should do this?
Her point is that this is a cat-and-mouse game and that the government has not kept up with the ability to be able to decrypt these phones on their own. And that their outsourcing of this and compulsion of an Apple, ultimately a Samsung, et cetera, is a deficiency in their own...
Yeah. What I think she's mistaken, what it sounds like she's saying is, well, we should just have, we should build some giant quantum computers so that we can break encryption.
Or hire a bunch of hackers to build zero-day exploits that only the government knows about.
We know we've done that.
Well, sure.
And Snowden told us that.
NSA certainly has done that.
I think it's a foolish idea to think that you can defeat the math. The math is strong in this one. And it would be a mistake for the government to say, well, we're just going to build faster computers because we just make longer keys. That's not a hard thing to beat. And so that's not the way to go after this.
Okay, we'll combine that with Jonathan Zdarsky's theory that you could then mirror the image.
You have to take advantage of flaws.
Right.
The reason the mirror imaging works is because there is a flawed front door, which is this 4 or 6-digit code. That's just a bad passcode. That's all. It's not if you had a strong password, wouldn't matter. Encryption's encryption. The math is sound. And that's what's really challenging for this, because I don't think there's anything the government can do unless it says it mandates that encryption not be allowed. It has to do fundamentally what you just said, Jason Snell, which is make encryption illegal. And that's not going to work because encryption's a math.
Right. It's like making math illegal. And we can't make math illegal.
You can't. So you just make American encryption bad. How effective is that?
I feel like I'm playing devil's advocate, or at least what I'm interested in, because it's become such an echo chamber, I think, in the tech community of saying, like, well, encryption has to be legal. We have to continue this. So I've been trying to listen this week to all the different sides of it. And one of them that I found interesting was General Keith Anderson. He was the former NSA director. He was on Bloomberg. And his point was, A, look for the technical solution. I think we've discussed that. But he said the other option would be to look for a third-party solution. I think it's a little out there, but I'm just posing it because I'd like to hear your thoughts.
They don't want to say the true thing, which is you need to make encryption illegal. The government tried to do this before with very negative effects. When they said we cannot export strong encryption, as a result, we used 40-bit keys, which was weak, and that was allowed to export. And no browser company was going to make a separate version of the browser for U.S. and the rest of the world. So we had 40-bit keys in our browsers. And to this day, it continues to bite us because we still support this weak encryption technology in our browsers. And we're still trying to get this stuff out of there because it's such an easy target. That was a perfect example of the unintended negative consequence of making weak encryption. You just can't do it effectively. And so if the question is, and I think we've come to that conclusion, the question is, should encryption be illegal? there's no question that the answer is there's nothing you can do about it.
I think
can't make it illegal.
But
unilaterally.
I think you're on to something, though, this idea of an almost like an arms race more than a moonshot, that seems to be where this has to go, is encryption will improve and people's counter-encryption efforts will improve. There's theoretically quantum computers will at some point be able to decrypt things at a much higher rate. There are going to be security flaws that can be exploited, but we may all as a society... And this may take 20 years for us to go through all this turmoil. As a society, we may all finally have to just admit that technology is going to create a brand new unreadable space.
It has.
We're already there, but we'll have to come to grips with that. That it's like inside of your mind. True encryption is like that. You can't court order it open because there's no magic key to unlock the door.
I would submit that the smartest intelligence agencies in the United States and law enforcement office in the United States know that. That's why they said, well, don't worry about it because we're going to have the Internet of Things. We're going to have lots of ways to spy on you. Yes, there's going to be strong encryption. You can't stop that and you shouldn't stop that because it would weaken us as a country. It would weaken our safety. But don't worry. There's plenty of ways we can spy on you. There's always going to be 0 days. And that's enough. And I think the most sophisticated law enforcement people are saying that.
Harry, do you think it's this binary?
Well, no, it's hugely complicated. And I think the other question is, if Apple was able to build a magic backdoor that only the government could get into, only under the proper circumstances, and there was no way that anybody could leverage that to get in other than the government under proper circumstances, would we then be okay with that? Because Apple's argument, a big part of it is... If we do create some kind of backdoor, then the code will get out there. The bad guys can use it.
I think they're really right.
It's really dangerous.
A backdoor isn't going to work. You either unilaterally make encryption illegal, which we know is a bad idea, or you just live with it. And I think everybody's going to come around to live with it because you have no choice.
But it's then done. Game it out. Okay, so then encryption stays legal. You can't compel the
neither
companies.
Can you nor should you.
Right. Well, it doesn't even matter if you can because, as you said, it's a hardware issue. So let's say this is how you compel Apple to do it. Well, good luck compelling Huawei to do it.
Right.
So if you game this out, at the end of the day, that leaves the federal government with no choice other than to really find their own way into
find
this.
Other ways
and that's where I think
people.
It is an arms race, and I think it is a moonshot in terms of they have to build out their infrastructure.
Well, that arms race is going to continue. The zero-day exploits, the finding new ways to spy on you, that's going to continue. And maybe that's the moonshot. I hate to think of that as a moonshot. That's such a negative moonshot. I don't want to see our government invest billions of dollars into, freaking through walls so they can read what you're typing.
I think it's more algorithmic than that,
Van Eck freaking.
I haven't heard that phrase in a long time.
Van Eck freaking. It took me a while to dredge it up from the memory.
Well, they're sort of used to being able to go to AT&T and...
just say, give us a room.
And AT&T welcome
Kalia
them with open
made
arms.
That possible. But encryption makes it... You can make Kalia 3, Kalia 2. You can make as many Kalias as you want. Encryption, the math wins in the end. And it's done. I think that's really the bottom line. And what you'll have is a lot of vestigial kind of, well, we got to find a way to have a backdoor. You have a lot of that noise going on. Doesn't matter. The math won. It's too late. Don't you think? It's too late.
There will be solutions that come through other channels, whether they're legislative, judicial.
They'll put cameras in every room. Actually, we'll put cameras in. Wait a minute. I did put a camera in every room.
Yeah.
Most of the data on your phone comes in and out over a network, which is a whole different technical question.
Yeah. By the way, nobody. I keep waving my phone around. No one's commented on how beautiful my phone is.
It's a mirror.
It's not a mirror. You know what's so funny? It is a mirror finish. This is the Samsung Galaxy S7. It's a mirror finish, but go ahead and try to use it as a mirror.
Oh, I can't tell if I've got they've done something, on my teeth.
They've done
something
magical to keep it from being a mirror. Huh. Why would they do that?
I think they must have heard that people move their phone around and go,
it's me. You can't, it's reflective, but doesn't reflect.
You like it?
Oh, I love this phone. Because it looks, doesn't it look like a brick of solid gold? This actually is a wonderful phone. This is the always on feature, which I really like. You always see the time and you can put different things up there, but it always shows the time. They say it only depletes the battery 0.8% an hour. This is the Samsung Galaxy S7 Edge. And, yeah, even an iPhone
Always on is a good feature.
Even an iPhone guy's got to look at that and say, boy, that's a you don't have to get gold. They have black.
The hardware's nice, but that always on feature,
nice?
I want that now.
Camera cool. is amazing.
And I don't think Apple can do that because I think you need an OLED screen.
Yeah, they need to go to OLED.
Guess who owns the screens? Right. Samsung makes all these screens. The screen is mind-boggling.
And it has Samsung Pay.
It sounds like somebody said, and it has Samsung Pay. Was I hallucinating that?
Mm-hmm. It does. And yeah, that makes it better than an iPhone. That makes it better than
Samsung
an iPhone.
Samsung Pay means you can tap to pay at a swipe-only register, of which there are still many.
And it works much of the time, but not all the time. And anything that works much of the time, but not all the time, is tricky, especially with payments, if there are people standing in line behind you.
Have you guys noticed that all of the chip readers that are underneath the traditional swipers now have tape over them?
Yeah.
They say don't insert. Something like 17% of all merchants who have the technology aren't using the chip.
Is that because the chip takes so long?
I don't know.
Because you can't just put it in. You don't swipe it. You leave it in there.
It could
there.
Also be that they've got the hardware, but their service provider hasn't turned on the feature yet, so it's still waiting. Although I've been to places that have it now, and it's really infuriating because if you've ever traveled, chip and PIN is really convenient.
Right.
This chip and sign, why am I sticking my card in if I still have to sign a receipt?
I think it's dying. Because I see places when I started there and I could do the chip, now they've got the tape over it.
Yeah.
So I think that the adoption has just gone in the tanks.
If you're running a market and you've got a limited number of checkers and you know that the chip thing slows you down by 30 seconds or a minute, you could do the calculation at Trader Joe's or something and say, you know what? Because what they trade off is on fraud. They have to own the fraud if they do a swipe instead of the chip.
That's the reason.
And so you could totally make that calculation and say it's not worth it to have our lines be that long in the store. People are going to not come in. They're not going to shop. Yep. We'll just eat the fraud and just deal with it and let people swipe their card.
I think you're right. And
so
the irony is chip and sign is certainly no more secure than swipe and sign.
No, chip and PIN would be great.
Even chip and PIN.
Well, it's better. It's better
been
than
cracked.
Anything involving signing.
Yeah.
A piece of paper.
Right. I know. With whatever.
Just draw a
By the way, they don't. It doesn't matter what you sign.
Oh, yeah. I have my kids do it.
Yeah.
The U.S. is such a backwater just in general when it comes to payment technology. It's really pretty embarrassing.
It's often the case that the people who invented the technology are the ones farthest behind because they have legacy systems. They have infrastructure.
We've had it for a long time. We're a big country.
They don't want to start over. We're a big country. They don't want to start over.
My great hope for the Apple Watch was that it would be great for payment.
I use it. Everywhere there's Apple Pay, I pay with my
you
Apple
like
Watch.
You like to do that?
I love it. It is the best. But it's only like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's and a couple other places and not like my local Safeway or anything like that.
Walgreens.
Yeah, there's a handful and I love it when I get them. But because that feels like the future is the contactless pay. But it's still not there. Fortunately, a lot of these devices that do chip also do contactless, and eventually they're all going to support all the payment methods.
Right.
And we'll just pay with our phones or our watches and we'll be done. But we're not there yet.
Let's take a break. What a panel. What a bunch of brains we got here. They're probably the total IQ here is probably 8,000. Becky Worley is here from GMA. Nice to have you, my old buddy. First producer of Call for Help and the Screensavers on Tech TV way back when. Good old days.
Those were the days.
What is weird to me is how much older I look and how much younger you look.
We both look exactly the same.
Oh, come on. Mm-hmm. Look at her. She hasn't aged a day.
I eat a lot of kale.
Kills me. Just kills me. Jason Snell is also here from sixcolors.com. What are you doing?
I got Windows up. I got IRC here for the chat room. I got some Twitter. I got some Slack. It's all on the iPad Pro.
You got it all open.
It's all on the Pro. It's working, yeah.
And you are not using the special. We talked about this on the Screensavers when you were on a couple of weeks ago. You're not using the iPad, the Apple case. You're just using a plain old Bluetooth keyboard.
Yeah. It's got more keys.
More keys.
It's
got more keys. It's always better.
All the keys.
Sixcolors.com. And don't forget the incomparable, wonderful podcast.
Yes, thank you.
And from Fast Company, my good buddy Harry McCracken, the technologizer. Always great to have you in. And follow Harry on Instagram.
Well, yeah, actually, the last time you told people to do that, all of a sudden I got dozens, if not hundreds, of new
people. You should, because you take great pictures, and you kind of like to do the vintage thing.
Yes.
I like which, is what is your Instagram handle?
It is actually it's Technologizer.
Okay.
I usually take some shots of your stuff when I'm here.
You know what? You should go in the basement.
Wow, I'd love to someday.
Well, I think we can arrange that. The funny thing is that, you know, we're going to be moving probably in the summer, I think. And I think we're going to have to throw out a lot of stuff.
No, don't.
No.
Give it to the computer museum.
You just moved in here.
Feels like that. We've been here almost, it'll be 5+ years. And they sold the place for a brewery. Where we're sitting right now will be a giant vat of hops.
We're setting the stage now. I've noticed that Twitter is more excited about posting pictures of our drinks than retweeting.
Are there a lot
of
pictures of our
deep
drinks?
Thoughts.
Okay. All right.
Do you know where you're moving yet?
Yeah, we do. I think we haven't. I think we've almost signed the. I don't know. It's close.
I saw something on the internet that said East Petaluma. It was very exciting.
It's not. Well.
But that was early on. This
it's
was just in
northeast.
Wow.
It's not far from here. It's 2 miles from here. It's nearby. And it's going to be very much the same because we're just going to take this all and it's going to be a different shaped box. So we have to kind of muddle it around a little bit. But basically it's going to be here. But what we don't have room for is the basement crap. Mm-hmm. All, and we have so much stuff.
Have a yard sale or something and I'll come and buy
Harry,
it all.
Harry, why don't you just take it? I'll give it to
all right.
you.
I'll have a fundraiser.
I'll bring
no
my
offense,
pickup
Harry.
Truck.
Do you have somewhere to put it?
Is Marie going to kill me?
I think she is.
You should have a fundraiser. We could have a live auction.
Have a yard sale.
That would be fun.
Nobody wants
a Twit sidewalk sale.
Nobody wants a non-functioning Osborne computer.
Oh, you'd be surprised. People will travel here for a non-functioning Osborne computer.
Some of it's functioning. I think the Amiga works.
I gave away a B-Box when I left Mac User to go to Macworld, and I regret it to this day because I could have had a B-Box.
I occasionally buy back things I owned and got rid of 20 or 30 years ago.
How much for this fine Visor Palm computer? No. Comes with the, how about this? It comes with those modules. What were they called that you plugged them in? You would know that. Anyway, our show today brought to you by FreshBooks. We find it's easier to make money by doing advertising than selling our old gear at FreshBooks.com. Actually, this was the only way I could make money when I was a freelancer. You have to send out the invoices to get paid. I learned that lesson. Boy, did I learn that lesson. I hate doing invoices, firing up Word and Excel and getting all the receipts together for your expenses. And it was, I just would put it off and put it off. And then 6 months later, I'd go, I haven't received a check. That's because you haven't sent an invoice, Leo. And then you sent him 6 invoices, and they were not happy about that. Fortunately, Amber MacArthur, I was whining about this on the set, and Amber said, well, why don't you try FreshBooks? It just started in Toronto. It was the early 2000s. And it was so great because all of a sudden I'm making my invoices online. I'm emailing them out. They can pay faster because on every invoice there's a pay me button, and they can use any online service, you know, online payment service to pay you. And it's so much easier to keep track. When come tax time, you've got it all. It's basically cloud accounting software. And you'll just be so happy next tax time because all your cash flows in one place. You know exactly what invoices were sent, who paid you, who didn't pay you. And by the way, they automatically will ding them and say, hey, you haven't paid in a nice way, but they'll get you paid. And you'll know exactly where your income stands. You could take pictures of your receipts. Not only for expense purposes, but if you declare them as deductions, makes it a breeze at tax time. The FreshBooks app will do that. You can even set up FreshBooks to import expenses directly from your bank account. Best part about FreshBooks is that feeling you get when tax time comes around and you got it. I got this. You'll be ready because you're going to sign up right now at FreshBooks.com/twit and try it free for 30 days. See if it works for you. That's all. Just make sure you mention This Week in Tech when they say, how did you hear about us? FreshBooks.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support. What is that, a Mr. Peanut made of soda cans?
Oh, it's food cans.
It's a grocery store?
There's this event called Canstruction, which I think happens all around the world. And people like architects.
They build stuff out of cans.
And builders build giant things out of donated food cans. And when they're done showing them off, they give all of the food to charity.
Oh, or they could send me the cans and I'll put it in the basement.
But there's all kinds of stuff. It was at Rincon Center in San Francisco.
Nice.
It's closed, unfortunately.
But Harry's got pictures on the Technologizer blog. Look at that. There's prints made out of Campbell's soup.
Prince, Aretha Franklin, Michael Jackson.
People are creative. There's a giant duck.
Giant rubber ducky, giant tractor, Rosie the Riveter, who was really hard to do with cans. It's kind of cool because you're basically dealing with pixels, but they're these really
right.
large,
they're giant
round
pixels.
Yeah. So you probably would not be able to tell it's Rosie the Riveter unless you knew, because you can't really do her
squint.
In order to do her face with any detail, her face would have to be like
stand
yay
back.
Big.
Harry, you see the world through a different view.
Through canned colored glasses. What camera are you using? This looks like this shot is beautiful. You're not using a camera phone.
I did some of those with a phone you mentioned about 10 minutes ago, and we're praising.
Are you on NDA on this phone? You can't even say, can you? So something weird happened with this Galaxy S7. I bought it from T-Mobile. I didn't get it from PR. There are journalists, maybe somebody in this room, who have this but can't talk about it because they're still embargoed.
If I had one, I don't think I would be allowed to express any opinions about it. Most likely.
But T-Mobile sent this to me Monday because I bought it. I don't think that usually happens.
Sometimes,
that's unusual.
That would happen sometimes at Macworld, where we would be waiting for things from Apple, and we would buy them, and it was easier to just get them by buying them.
When would, how can I phrase this? This is talk about a hypothetical.
March 11th.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know.
March 11th.
March 11th.
Did they send it to you because you're you, or were there other folks who got them?
No, I went online the day the pre-orders began. I sent 700 some bucks. And I was shocked when T-Mobile sent me an email saying, your phone's going to arrive Monday. But no, it wasn't because of me. It was just I'm a customer. I get a free VR visor, too, and a year worth of Netflix. So there.
You know what? I would just like to say that Rubio and Trump ain't got nothing on me. Because when I see these big phones, it reminds me, all I can think is baby hands. Because all I see are...
Does this phone make my hands look small? That is it. That is an interesting question. I just got to say, there's absolutely no problem here. It's huge.
That's not a very large phone by today's standards.
Actually, what's funny is 5.5 inches, but because there's no bezel on it, it feels smaller than the iPhone 6S.
I have to say the wraparound edges are pretty cool.
It's not. I'll tell you the negative is you keep your fingers are on the edges. There's so little bezel and so little side that you have to hold it like you have tiny hands.
Is it touch sensitive on the side?
Yeah, this is the screen. The screen wraps around.
So are you accidentally launching things all the time?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, bummer.
And unfortunately, because it's so fast, they launch fast. It's kind of, it feels like the not only is the phone slippery, but the user interface is slippery. It's like things happen that you didn't really plan. On the other hand, I it's so beautiful. You could get this, the S7 without the edge, but so I just like the
edge. I was here 8 days ago.
Yeah.
For the screensavers, and you said, you know what? I think I might get that Galaxy S7.
I thought that,
and everybody laughed in the studio because you're like, yeah, we already figured that one out, Leo, because it's new. But you did it, and here it is. It's amazing, like that.
And then, and
2 days later, you had it.
2 weeks from now, there'll be a new iPhone, and I'll probably get that too. What's it? What do you hear?
Well, the rumor is that it's going to be this special edition. It's basically an update of the size we are familiar with from the iPhone 5 line. But
which is
with
4 inches, right?
Yeah, so it's a small phone. And you know what? There are people out there who want a small phone.
Because it makes your hands look big.
Yeah, or they have small hands and it makes their hands look normal size. I don't know. But
it's just so depressing that the political, there's so many important things to talk about.
God.
Anyway, go on.
Yeah. I actually think phones have gotten too thin and too big.
Like, that.
Because I can't, maybe I have baby hands, but that's like I'm constantly.
Does that feel too big?
That one's a little thicker than the last model, which is nice. I wish Apple
would. The first time I've said that, is it?
But I actually find that the iPhone 6 that I have is easier to handle with a case on. Because
Well, I did order a case for that.
My iPhone 6, it's the first iPhone I've ever used with a case. I was a no-case kind of person, and it's too slippery. It's like a little polished pebble.
I would
like phones that are more grippy, and I would trade a little bit of weight and thickness for more battery life, too. So I think a variety is a good thing, and I think that's the nice thing about Apple's this rumor about this iPhone SE or whatever is that it's not small phones or old phones. With this, it'll be like you can get a good modern iPhone with Touch ID and with a iPhone 6 internals in a smaller size if you want it, and I think that's great.
You know what's funny is that by all accounts, the next iPhone 7 will be even thinner.
That's
than
the rumor.
The current iPhone, that they are continuing this bizarre process of making it thinner still. And that's why they're – and that this one I think is going to be controversial.
You got to think it's Johnny Ive, right?
It's the he wants to say every year, this is the thinnest phone we've ever made. He wants to say that. And in order to do that, though, he's going to have to remove the earplug jack.
But see, that's the thing is, that's not accurate. The reality is there are lots of incredibly thin devices, including Apple's own iPod Touch, that are much thinner than the current iPhone and still has a standard headphone jack. Yeah. So they may use that as an excuse, but if they get rid of the headphone jack, it's not because of the quest for thinness.
It's not because of that? Boy, that seems like that, you know, sophisticated users will probably say, well, that's fine because I can, I don't know what, I'll figure out a thing to do with a lightning port. But I think most users are going to go, you got rid of the what?
Well, I think there is a huge percentage of iPhone users who just use the standard earbuds that come in the box.
Of course.
And those will, there will be a lightning version. If they do this, there'll be a lightning version.
So they just say, well, there's a lightning, it's just a different connector.
Yeah, for those people. But for anybody who's got third-party headphones, like all the Beats users, so speaking of a company Apple spent a lot of money to buy that makes custom headphones, it's going to be frustrating if they go down that path. But saying that it's for the quest for thinness, I think, bundles those two things together in a way that's not real.
What's the quest for? Quest for weirdness?
For charging us $30 for a tiny adapter.
That we'll lose. I want the quest for shatterproof.
Yeah, right. Waterproof, I think, is coming, and drop proof is the next real thing that I want in my phone.
I mean, besides the thinness thing, I think Johnny Ive also is a thing for eliminating ports, such as with the new MacBook. And
well, that goes back. That he and Steve Jobs were really simpatico on that. Steve never met a button he didn't want to remove for a product, and the apotheosis of that was that iPod Shuffle that had no buttons at all, which was unusable because you had to have a headphone plugged in and then use the clicker on the headphone cord. And the next version of that, you know, they went back to the previous design, which is one of the only times you've ever seen Apple basically back off of a product design entirely and abandon it. And it was because they, you know, philosophically, I think Johnny Ive still has this, like, get rid of all the ports, get rid of all the buttons, make it as simple, like it's a block of aluminum. That's the ultimate Apple product, is just an incredibly thin block of aluminum and glass.
And it can all be wireless, including the power they will try
That'll
to do
happen,
that.
Right? That'll happen. And well, this is wireless charging, this S7. I just put it on a thing and it charges. In fact, it has high-speed wireless charging.
I do feel with the new MacBook, though, it's not inconceivable they will do one with a couple
of ports.
Because it does, even almost a year later, that does seem to be sort of a obstacle for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the original MacBook Air only had one USB port, and when they did the redesign of that a couple years later, it had two.
Yeah.
And it was a much better product when
sometimes
they did that.
Apple admits,
more successful.
Yeah.
Apple is not, what you might think Apple doesn't admit mistakes, but Apple admits its mistakes.
It comes with trying to push things forward a little bit, that Apple will push things a little too far, too fast, and then the second round of a product will be way more usable, and the MacBook Air is the best example. That first MacBook Air was ridiculous. I had one, it was ridiculous, but the second generation was pretty great.
The 11-inch, the little teeny one?
The first one was the 13, I think. 13. The one with the little door you had to open in order to get to your USB port.
I actually like the MacBook. I would like to see a new MacBook. I bought this dongle for the MacBook that solves that port problem a little bit. It plugs into the C port. It kind of matches the look and feel of the MacBook, and then it gives you a SD card, a micro SD card, two USB 3 ports, and another charging port, so you can have it as a pass-through.
But
and still charge.
Murphy's Law of Dongles.
Yeah, this dongle will be lost.
Yeah, and the thing is when you
or
need...
Or I'll sit on it and I won't be able to figure
you
out
you didn't
where
even realize you needed it until you were up creek one day, and then you thought, oh, my God, I need... For me, it's always Ethernet.
But
well, that's
Ms. Worley, you didn't notice that that's why I carry a purse now.
That is a merce of all merces.
It has everything in it. I even have an Ethernet port in this merce.
Dang.
Well, you see, I think that's going to be the story if Apple does remove the headphone jack from their phone. It's not going to be about the people who are like, yeah, it's earbuds, I'm fine. But one day they're going to be at a party somewhere and somebody's going to be like, oh, you brought the music, right? Okay, plug it in here. And they're going to go, oh, no.
I'm telling you.
And that'll be the end of it.
Do
right?
that.
That's dongleitis.
You posted this. It's a new month. And that means Douglas Sinfeld is at it again with his drone. I don't know why Apple lets him do this, but I guess they haven't
yet. What are they going to do, shoot it down?
Yeah.
Please.
It's over their airspace.
Please.
Wait a minute. Actually, that's an interesting question. How high does he have to fly to be in public airspace? What is the rule on that?
I do not know. Is this for commercial uses? Because they could go after him for that.
I think it's for commercial uses by far.
Well,
I
mean, they could petition the FAA.
He posts on YouTube every month. This is the March 2016 Apple Campus. It is actually a, he's gotten better and better.
This was
in the production values
to see this campus.
HQ March 2016.
Boom, boom, boom.
And if you've been watching these videos he puts out, they're beautiful. You've been really watching the progress in the spaceship campus. It's coming along quite far. Does it open? It's about a year off, right?
I think that's the what it seems like they've said 2017.
Tim Cook was talking about how excited he is about moving into it. And for the first time, 12,000 employees will be in the same building.
Yeah.
They're all spread out now among many buildings.
Yeah, basically all of Cupertino is, all of its available space is Apple employees now. They've spilled out everywhere. It's just too big a company.
One of the really interesting questions is, do they name this the Steve Jobs campus?
It's got to be, or the Steve Jobs. I mean, there's a Steve Jobs building at Pixar, and I think that Tim Cook interview that I saw, that you also saw, was suggestion that they will do something, and they're working with the family on it. But I know that they had a big dedication for the Steve Jobs building at Pixar, and I imagine the same thing will happen.
I feel this
at
has
the new
to
campus.
This is about as poorly kept secret as Peyton Manning retiring.
What's the address going to be? Is Infinite Loop going to move?
No.
No, right? maybe
you
this
can't
is,
rename one Infinite Loop. That's one Infinite Loop.
Maybe this is Steve Jobs Circle.
Unless
or
they
something
sell it,
like
are
that
they going to sell the old
spaceship circle? Perhaps.
I don't know. Are they getting rid of the old?
I don't believe so. My understanding is they need so many people that they're going to need to keep the existing campus, the new campus, and there's talk that they may actually try to build something else in San Jose. I think because they need. They want their people to work together. That's the other thing, is a lot of these places in Cupertino where they have offices, you know, it's a floor here and then a couple floors over there, and they're not as collaborative workspaces because there's no room.
Did you say buildings?
These underground tunnels are worthy of Dr. No. I mean, these are kind of this is scary stuff. Like the parking is underground, much of it.
But wait, did you say 20,000 employees?
12,000 into this one.
Okay, so there's 12,000 employees and 10,900 parking spaces.
Well, some of them will carpool.
Right, that's actually more manageable. I mean, at Yahoo, every year the parking spaces got repainted smaller.
Right.
Smaller.
Oh, really? That's how they solved that?
When Marissa said you couldn't work from home anymore, they just went. I remember when I was pregnant, I had to stop going there because I couldn't get out of my car. I was like, I don't have a handicap placard. I don't know what to do.
I can't actually fit through the door.
Well, and for people who don't know about Silicon Valley, it's essentially the suburbs. They built all of this office infrastructure in the suburbs, so there's no public transportation.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a terrible place to have big companies because everybody has to commute by car. That's really the only way to do it.
Are those freaking shuttle buses?
Or the buses that everybody hates.
Oh, Harry's fired up about that.
Everybody in San Francisco.
I
think riding them and then is quite
nice. It's got to be sweet, right?
Yeah.
Wi-Fi enabled.
Mm-hmm. Leather seats.
You work on your way to work. You get there. You go to the gym.
Many of them have a massage therapist in the bus.
Oh, my God. 100,000.
No, I'm making that up, but I think it's a good idea.
Anything is plausible at this point. There was a 100,000 square foot fitness center being constructed at this new Apple campus. Yeah.
I thought you were going to say that was inside the shuttle buses, too.
Yeah. The fitness bus pulls alongside, and you can get
in. It's actually powered by cyclists inside.
Thank you, Duncan Sinfield, for the beautiful video of the Apple campus. He's got to be shooting these on Reds now. I mean, he's really upgraded the production value and the beautiful drone.
It's not in here, but DJI 4 this week with auto sensing. So the drones now can have collision avoidance.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I like that.
I mean, they do the whole virtual cable. So basically you can program a route for the drone to go from one point to the next.
It follow me? That's what I want.
Yes,
somebody's made some that follow you. Yes. You have like a device on your wrist or something.
3D Robotics has it. You can run it off your Pebble. You can run it off your phone. Chris Anderson, who used to be at Wired, who's now at 3D Robotics, he gave me a full demo of that. It's pretty incredible. And seeing that virtual cable in the sky is amazing.
What's the virtual cable?
So you pick a point on a Google map that's in a satellite map that's in their app. You pick point A, you pick point B, and it just goes back and forth and back and forth. It's not unlike this. If you're looking right here at this little auto slider that you have in front of us here, it's just constantly on a cable going back and forth.
Mm.
So the big thing here in the Phantom 4 is that they have collision avoidance, because this is one of the huge elements for the FAA as they think about the future of drones.
Oh, so it wouldn't just be other drones. It would be aircraft. So.
And more importantly, buildings, people.
Right. I was at Moffett Field the other week at NASA Ames Research, and they did a demo of their next generation air traffic control for drones, basically. And their vision is that you will be able to file a drone flight plan basically by web form or web service, and you can say, I want to go here, here's when I want to go, and it will provide you a route and basically send it to your drone and say, here's your route. This is your airspace. It's about like 100 yards wide. It lasts for this amount of time, and it just it compiles all the drone flight plans and makes sure that they don't interact, and if it can't get you from point A to point B, it'll kick it back and say, how about a different time? How about a different route? It's pretty amazing that it makes sense, right? I mean, this is all technology we've got. We should be able to do this.
This really is the ultimate selfie, though, to have a drone as you do things.
Yeah, who needs a GoPro?
Following you around, making sure that not a single shot is missed of anything in your most important life.
Have you seen the Lily drone promo? No. The Lily drone, it's kind of vaporware right now. Let me rephrase that. It was a Kickstarter that they put an amazing video out for. Basically, it's this little orb, and this guy throws it off of a bridge, and it launches into a full-fledged drone, and it follows you around. It was incredible. I called him. I said, hey, this is amazing. We want to do this on Good Morning America. And
well, we don't actually have one that works.
They declined, so that was about 6 months ago.
That was a 3D rendering.
But watch this. Throw and go. Boom. And then the guy takes off on his snowboard, and the drone is following behind him about, what do you think that is, 20, 30 yards, and getting all of his motion. So he's not carrying a stick. He doesn't have a helmet cam.
In this one, he was wearing a wristband, right, I think?
Yeah, it's its own proprietary
And then it
device.
Comes to you after you're done?
Mm-hmm.
That's falconry.
Now, we haven't seen this. I haven't seen this. Let me read
it. This looks
that.
Like real video on their website.
They're... As
I guess it could be CGI.
I think it's probably real. I just don't know if they've come up with the production elements.
Yeah, producible version.
But I think that 3D robotics has shown
What is wrong with us? Are we the most self-centered society in the history of mankind? That we spend all this energy to develop cameras to follow us around? Hi. Oh, it's nice of you to join us on
that. Oh, right.
We only have six cameras right here.
Like
Leo.
We seven, kind of, seven. What, are we going to create our own
this
network?
This is my job, damn it.
Are we going to create our own network that follows all of our interests and movements?
I admit I don't probably have the standing to complain, but it does seem like this is a little solipsistic.
Well, yeah, but from a cinematography standpoint, even
it's
if...
It's gorgeous.
And
drones.
Sports. And, you know, I go back to the GoPro philosophy, which does, you know, Nick Woodman's whole philosophy is he wants every athlete to feel like a professional.
Right. Even if they're not. It was your colleague, David Polk, who pointed out that one of the reasons we love drones is we're like ants on the surface of a map. We never see anything but our own 2D perspective. Mm-hmm. And it's so, and I have to agree with him that when you see the first time just what it looks like from above, it's a unique
whole
perspective and it's pretty exciting.
Yeah.
I think that's probably the appeal of this.
Harry, what's going to happen with drones?
I mean, it's amazing how much has happened and... I'm trying to think when Parrot came out with their first consumer drone.
You remember seeing that at CES the first time?
Like 5 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, probably.
And it was a mind bender.
You used an iPhone to steer it. It was hard.
I mean, I do feel in terms of whether people are just doing it to please themselves. It's self-correcting. If the only person who wants to watch your drone video is you, that's really sad. But a lot of this stuff is really cool.
Right.
And as long as at least one other person thinks the video you shot is cool, then it's not being self-absorbed.
No,
that's
right.
You
have to do something interesting. It's no point.
And eventually it will become kind of trite because everybody will have these eventually.
Yeah, I think some of the excitement of seeing the world from above will wear off.
There's a huge amount of novelty now. I mean, it's sort of like in, I guess, maybe the 80s when people first started to have camcorders. And any sort of... Actually, remember, I had a friend who went to Taiwan and took a video camera that involved a VCR on a... shoulder strap, and he walked around and just shot what he saw, and it was totally mind-bending at the time. It's completely mundane now.
Right.
Yeah. And drones will eventually be like that.
My version of that story is I had a friend in the 80s and 90s. He was a helicopter pilot on Maui, and he was shooting all the big wave surfing. A big trough came that took the ground out from underneath his rotor wash, and therefore his helicopter dropped, and the wave came right over him. So now, flash forward to today, It's been the biggest big wave surfing season in history at Peahi at Jaws. There are drones everywhere there shooting the most amazing footage, practically from inside the tube, following the surfer as he goes through. It's a completely different view of one of the most amazing things.
Is there a hazard with all these drones?
Ask, what is it, Enrique Iglesias.
Did he get hit? His finger got cut?
He had one right up in front of him, and he was performing to it.
And he stuck his hip finger in it?
There was a...
Don't ever do that.
But see, that's where the contact avoidance is so important.
Right.
Because
the drone should have backed away.
If that's its last mode of self-defense, then you can see where that becomes an issue.
Because I'm wondering, there was such panic over drones a few months ago, and I was wondering, has it gone away or not? And then I realized I've just seen at least two articles about near misses with commercial air traffic. And Charles de Gaulle, Air France, very close miss. And according to The Guardian, there have been four near miss incidents at UK airports, including a passenger jet taking off from London Stansted.
Don't forget all the fires where people bring out drones to take pictures of of like wildfires, and the air attack people are trying to put out the fires, and the drones are in the way.
And they had to back off the air attack people. 777 taking off from Heathrow saw an 18-inch drone passing less than a wingspan away from the plane. That is an absolute near miss. And you might say, well, that an 18-inch drone, what could that do to a 777? It could bring it down.
A pigeon can bring down a plane.
Right.
So
I guess it is something still to be worried about.
200 people killed since 1988 because of airborne collisions with birds.
So there you go. Imagine, there's a lot of birds.
I'm reading this. I don't know that offhand. Just a lot of birds. In case you guys were worried, I was really up on bird collision stuff.
All right, let's take a break. I want to ask you about Yahoo, since you're not there anymore. What's going on over there? Becky Worley is here, formerly with Yahoo News. David's still there, though, right?
He transferred over to news out of the tech vertical.
Well, they killed a lot of the verticals. Let's talk about that. Also, Jason Snell from... it's nice to be independent, isn't it?
Yeah, although I was doing some freelance work for Yahoo, too, I'm not anymore. I was writing space columns for them, which was a real kick to write about space.
Space is awesome.
Yeah, it is.
And there's lots of it.
There's a whole lot of it. It's a growth location.
Also,
it goes on for miles.
The technologizer, Harry McCracken. Our show today brought to you by Wealthfront. I think you know that you should be saving money for the rainy day ahead, whether it's your retirement, the kids going to college, maybe you want to get a down payment on a house. Long-term savings are very important, but the question is, where do you put that money? I was just looking at savings account interest rates. I can't believe how low they are now. Much less than 1% a year, often maybe a quarter or a half percent a year. I got my interest. The reason I was interested in this, I got my check from my bank for my savings interest, 3 cents. And I thought, you know, I actually might have lost money by putting it in a savings account. You might as well put it in a mattress. Well, Wealthfront has a better way for you to invest. Now, many people try to invest for themselves. The problem with that is you don't have the time to keep an eye on this 24/7. You don't have the time probably to check it every quarter. So you're going to hire somebody? Well, wait a minute. Investment advisors charge 1%, 2%, sometimes 3% of the money under management every year. That means you have to make 3% more to break even. That's tough. Wealthfront's a great idea because you are not using humans. You're using software, and you're paying 0.25% a year with no commissions, no hidden fees, very affordable. And by the way, in my opinion, it does a better job than any human can do. First of all, Wealthfront's put together an advisory board of some of the best investment people in the world. 200 years of investment experience, Nobel Prize-winning academic research, best practices, people like Charles D. Ellis, Burton Malkiel, who really, literally wrote the books that I read when I thought, I could do this myself. Well, what if you took their minds, their brains, their knowledge, and put it into software that monitors your investment 24/7? Can make trades on your... This is not day trading. This is not flash trading. But they are constantly monitoring your portfolio, constantly rebalancing, doing things like tax loss harvesting to increase your return while minimizing your taxes. It's all built in. Really, most portfolios, the estimate is about 90% of all portfolios are not properly invested for long term. If you have long-term savings, if you don't, you ought to. And if you have them, you've got to check out Wealthfront. You could start as little as $500. And this is a nice little treat. For your first $15,000 of investment at Wealthfront, no fee at all, not even 0.25% forever. But you have to use wealthfront.com/twit. So here's the deal. I don't want you to invest without reading about it. Go to the website, wealthfront.com/twit. Read up. Reassure yourself, as I have, that this is a really great service that really makes sense. You can even get a free portfolio generated for you, so you'll see what they would invest in based on your time frame, your risk tolerance, things like that. That's yours free. Read up and find out, and then you can start with as little as $500. And I strongly suggest you find out about it. Wealthfront.com/twit. Becky Worley's here. Jason Snell, the technologizer. Harry McCracken, we're talking about the week's tech news. So, Becky, I've known you for years. You were a very close friend at Tech TV for years, producing our shows and working with me, eventually hosting.
I was 12 then.
I was a very young woman. and then you've gone on to better and bigger things, including Good Morning America. But you also worked at Yahoo. How long did you work at Yahoo?
I've been at Yahoo 3 times. So this is
wait a minute. Let's get the microphone in front of you, not behind you.
This is the great profile of Yahoo. When I first went to Yahoo, I did a...
Was that right after Tech TV?
Yes. And it was when Terry Semel was the CEO.
Terry Semel, yeah.
And
Hollywood
he
guy.
Hired his BFF, who had just finished producing Friends.
Wow.
So we made a pilot.
Oh, dear.
And it cost $72,000 to produce.
Oh, yeah.
And
okay.
It was 14 minutes long.
Oh, my God.
It was a one-segment web video. So that was then.
Okay.
Then we launched...
What was it? Can we find it?
Oh, God.
Do you remember the name of it?
Now House? Now House. Wow House? It was horrible. It was so painful. I hope it doesn't live. Please let the internet...
It was unfortunately before YouTube, so probably you're safe.
I have the right to be forgotten on that one. Then I will move on to the next stage, which was Yahoo Tech. Pat Houston, Annette Cardwell, Steve Enders, Robin Raskin. I'm forgetting a bunch of great people. Gina Hughes, Chris Null. That was great. That was their first real tech vertical.
Wait a minute. Wow House was a reality program.
Oh, it was reality.
Pitting two families in a competition to determine which could do a more successful tech upgrade for 10 grand.
Wow House.
Wow House.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. 70-something thousand. It was, it was
then
painful.
They renamed it to Hook Me Up.
So much better. So much better. Please, let me crawl under the table now. So then Yahoo Tech, that whole vertical died, and now they came back with the new one, which, and I had a show, that was my fourth. I had a show called Upgrade Your Life, which was so much fun, and it was kind of a life hacker, Martha Stewart meets technology, a little bit of everything, and that I really am proud of and love, and still so many of the things are evergreen and had a great production team. Then...
What year are we now?
Yeah, I know. Can you believe Yahoo? Then David Pogue came in and they did the whole tech vertical
that
with
was the
New
tech
York
vertical.
Times,
right.
Megan Lieberman,
right.
Who's right. From the New York Times, who came over and they did that all of that out
Rafe
of New York.
Rafe Needleman went over there.
Rafe, yep. A bunch of great, great yep. People. And now they've just shelved that one.
Almost all the verticals got shelved, right?
Yeah.
And what folded into
news
yeah,
or
just, yeah.
That's kind of sad. I mean, they really put a lot of money and effort. And I thought, here's the problem. Yahoo's trying to do what so many have tried and failed to do before, which is make tech accessible and interesting to normal people. And it turns out really nobody's that interested.
It's not a subcategory in so many ways.
Well, that's the irony of it. Nobody was interested before because it was just geeks. And then suddenly it was so much a part of your life that it isn't separate. Right. It's just your life.
Well, that's why I'm as much a consumer reporter as I am a tech reporter when it comes to mainstream media. They're the same thing in the eyes of those folks. Yahoo, this was a few weeks ago, but I still find this fascinating. Time, considering buying Yahoo.
Yep.
A reverse Morris Trust, which means that it's when a smaller company tries to buy a bigger company. And
wait a minute. Time Life, Warner, AOL, Time?
No, Time Inc.
Used to work for them.
Yes. Time Inc., which was spun off from Time Warner.
So Time Inc. is a small little...
It's fairly small. It's principally engaged in the publishing of print magazines. It has a lot of online stuff going on, but we certainly would like to have more of it.
Interesting.
23,000 videos they made last year, according to Joe Ripp, who's the CEO. They have $1 billion in subscriptions, but they have no products and services. So they're like, hey, let's get Yahoo. Digital eyeballs, products and services,
and what is
production
Yahoo,
wing.
If I wanted to buy Yahoo now, what would it cost me?
They just got an offer last week from a Japanese company that raised its price target to Yahoo on Yahoo to $32 a share, up from $29. I'm sorry, I don't know the market cap offhand.
I mean, it's been a little unclear because they have this investment in Alibaba, which is fabulous.
Didn't they spin
successful.
That off? I thought
Not
they spun
yet.
That
well,
off.
They tried to, but couldn't. It. So there are times when
so the market cap is exactly $32 billion.
There are times where if you do the math, the rest of Yahoo isn't worth anything because the market cap is the same as the investment in Alibaba.
So what you do is you spin off Alibaba, get your money back, and now you've got free content.
But rather than spinning off Alibaba, they're planning to spin off Yahoo.
Yeah.
Oh, I get
it. So
that's the reverse Morris?
And it has a major tax benefit because they don't have to pay taxes on the asset of what they're selling to a smaller company.
In fact, wasn't that what happened was that the board had been assured by the IRS that there would be no tax consequence to spinning off Alibaba. Exactly. And then the IRS backtracked and said, well, we can't promise you that. And the board said, uh-oh. You know, we could sell it, but we might be, you know, might lose half the profits in taxes.
They spent a year working on the spin out and then decided not to do it. And now they're saying either they'll spin off the rest of Yahoo or they might sell it to one buyer, such as Time or Verizon, or they might break it up, or they might just not do anything.
And do any of these changes involve Marissa Meyer, or is she kind of...
She would not go to Time.
Right. That would make no sense. What would happen? So, okay. Would she? There's nothing for her to run.
She would run the outcropping of the Alibaba that's left over, and they wouldn't have to pay her parachute.
They would not.
No.
Because firing her would cost them $100-some million.
She'd be like one of those workers that you remember reading about
in
Japan.
The window
workers, right? They come in, they sit at the window, they look out mournfully, and then they go home at the end of the day.
They have that on the roof at Hooli. They have lunch.
Sure.
Nothing to do. I think I did that for Ziff Davis for about 6 months. Gina Smith and I, in principle, worked for Ziff Davis, but we had no portfolio. We got paid well. It was, I think it was like almost $100,000 a year not to do anything.
Oh, wow, fabulous. Sorry. I mean,
then, it's soul crushing, but...
Well, that's when I started all this
other
stuff,
done.
Right? And then MGM said, oh, we want to partner with Ziff Davis to do television, as Ziff Davis had been apparently very interested in television. So they sent me and Gina down to MGM, but they pulled me aside and said, but we're not going to do anything. So just go down there and pretend you're working. So I got a card key to the MGM back lot and got offices. I don't think I ever went back to that office. I think I went there once.
Wow.
I want to talk about the Google autonomous car accident.
Okay, well, we're going to get to that. I want to finish Yahoo.
So okay,
this is a true professional. She has decided she's going to host this show.
She is the better host than I. And if we could just hire her, I would retire.
It's only because there's just such a black hole we could go down
into. I love
into.
This one. I mean, we are going to do this. That's absolutely.
It's made Kara Swisher's career. I can't let this show degrade into this.
Yahoo has.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, what is Kara going to do? Forget Marissa Meyer. What is Kara going to do? There's nothing. I mean, nothing to write about. So what do you think is going to happen? I mean, by the way, nobody in the real world probably cares about this. We only care because Yahoo was Yahoo.
I know.
It was akabono.stanford.edu. Mm-hmm. It was Jerry and David. It was one of the very first internet companies.
I think we care because this may be the actual end game.
Sounds like it is, doesn't it?
When Marissa came on, there was a lot of excitement. It seemed like the one Hail Mary that might pan out, and it has not panned out.
You can be candid. Has she been a failure?
All I know is since she's been there, she gave birth to 3 kids. So I have so much respect for the woman,
now,
including twins.
To be fair, one was twins. One set was twins.
Oh my!
Not
I have
3 in
so
a row.
Much I mean, that is. I'm just. I know that's totally a sidebar. And as a woman, I shouldn't make it about that. But I just have. I have personally. She did an earnings call 2 days before she had the C-section for her twins. I'm just so blown away. Personally,
she's one of those people that schedules the birth. I think.
You don't have a choice when you have twins. They're like they're coming.
I guess
out.
That's
Listen,
it. You have twins, you know.
Yes, I do.
you have a real reason to respect that.
But
no,
I tell you what,
I think Marissa Meyer is brilliant. I think she might not have been the right person for the job, but that was a job that I don't know if anybody could have done that.
I think given the trajectory Yahoo has been on since the Terry Semel days, perhaps the mark of her tenure will be the price the shareholders walk away with.
That's going to be the final deciding.
And I feel bad breaking it down to such a sort of pecuniary
But when you're a CEO of a company, that's your job.
And there's so many good people there. I have
that's
so many.
That's what's sad.
Yeah. But the good news is every breakup is a diaspora.
Right.
And so that's
what happened at Tech TV. We all went on.
It's a networking opportunity for all those people to find new people. I hope the best. I hope the best for the shareholder value. I am sad to see one go down, but they just chose the wrong path.
What happens to people who are working there right now? How do they feel? Are they kind of dejected? I mean, David Pogue left the New York Times to go to Yahoo. He left a very good job.
I don't know his story because
he's
going to
do fine.
The New York media folks who went with Megan Lieberman, who came from the New York Times, that's a different animal.
Yeah.
But the people in Sunnyvale are so battle hardened.
I bet.
You've never seen anybody who can handle a reorg better than those folks.
Oh, here it comes again.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Oh, should I bring lunch today?
Yeah.
Okay.
Are snacks out or what?
Yeah, do we get snacks? That's when I knew it was over at Tech TV.
No snacks.
With the first they came for the makeup artists, I did not protest.
Yeah.
Then they came for the wardrobe artists. I said nothing. Then they came for the floor managers, the stage directors, and I...
You should have.
But when they came for the oatmeal...
The snacks.
That's what I knew.
Yeah.
And Yahoo did not have free food until Marissa got there. That was one of her big initiatives, because it's very hard...
You're kidding.
It's very hard to hire good engineers if you expect them to pay
for
their own
meals. Have you
seen
our snack cupboard here?
It's amazing. They have better Indian food at Yahoo. I'm sorry.
We have Indian food, but you have to heat it up yourself. It's like you add water.
No.
We actually do have Indian food in the back there. I don't know why.
We are digressing.
Okay, we're going to talk about the Google self-driving car. But first, because that's the crash. The first time ever a self-driving car crashed. And you know what? It's good news.
Yeah.
It's good news.
There's
it's
learning.
A good thing.
There's
it's a
learning.
Good thing. But first, if you missed anything, speaking of crashes, during the week on Twit, we've made a little play for you out of what happened this week on Twit. Watch.
Previously on Twit.
We're doing a show. I don't know if you knew that. It looks like you're wearing a vibe.
I'm technically in a way cooler place than you guys could possibly imagine.
Twit Live Specials.
My name is Jason Howell, and I am at the Launch Festival. This is just a really cool opportunity for companies, startups, to come in and kind of show what they got.
Is that your goal here, is to shut down coffee shops everywhere?
No, that's definitely not our goal. FAIX is trying to create an ultra premium coffee experience, you know, by utilizing robot and automation technology.
The new screensavers.
Palmer Luckey, he's the founder of Oculus. He was asked, when are you going to make this for Apple? And he said, well, as soon as Apple makes a good computer.
No! Burn!
He's saying Apple used to pay a lot of attention to GPUs. They don't anymore.
And it's such a low percentage of their profit every year.
If you're a gamer, you don't buy a Mac.
You don't buy a Mac.
Tech News Today.
Three companies are offering their employees an Apple Watch, the low, low price of $25. If the employee doesn't meet regular fitness goals, they will have to pay full price for the Apple Watch. I have two fifth graders, and they put on my watch, and all my calories that I need to burn for a day happen in 15 minutes.
Twit. It's free when you watch from work.
If you're coming to build, try to stick around Friday afternoon and evening.
Will I need a badge to get in?
We'll take care of that.
Okay.
Yeah, don't worry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Will I need to wear clothes?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
It's the first thing I always ask.
Yeah.
It's not so much clothes as pants. I'm not wearing pants now.
No?
No, you don't see anything below the waist. You don't, who needs pants?
Oh, Lord.
You're seeing something below the waist.
But
I didn't expect you'd be sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, did you see that the launch festival that Jason announced he's going to be in a reality TV show? Not Jason Howell. Don't call him Silicon Valley Snooki. Actually, he really is Snooki. He apparently Harvey Weinstein, who is one of the great movie producers of Hollywood, took a shine to Calacanis and signed him up for a show that's headed to NBC. It will be, there's Harvey. It will be like The Apprentice. There'll be 12 startups who will compete for funding. Calacanis fires one each week until the end, and the winning startup will get a first round of funding worth maybe $1 million, two, maybe even $3 million. It'll be the Calacanis already sounding like Donald Trump.
Yeah.
It'll be the hugest prize in the history of television. Hugest. So I think Jason will, he's going to be great. It's going to be awesome. And I feel like he's got political aspirations. I feel like that's the first step to running for something.
He's great TV. He's very polarizing. And that's what makes great TV.
He will be good, won't he?
Television is visuals first, emotion second.
Yeah.
And there have been many shows about Silicon Valley. All of them have stunk.
Yep.
Except for Silicon Valley.
The fictional show. Yeah, but the Shark Tank style shows, this is not the first reality show. Yeah. Randy Zuckerberg did one that was, I didn't even see it, but it was gone before you could see it.
It's reality is all about characters. And so they have to be memorable, and he is.
He is. He is. I think he should get us on that show, though.
Yeah, let's
in
do it.
Some way, some yep. form or fashion.
Yep, yep. We'll streak it.
I know he's listening. We'll streak it.
Totally.
Google Car, self-driving car, has been in many accidents, but in every case, it was the human's fault. Not the driver, human driver, but the other car's fault. Not so this one. Let's take a break, and we'll talk about it when we come back. But I think it's time to do another ad. I have to keep track of these. I get out of order, and I
got really excited about Apple. That's why this Apple thing is so fascinating, and it's worth talking about it at great depth, especially with good minds.
Well, and every show for the last 2 weeks is all we've talked about. But I think what's happened is, as we've talked about, it's boiled down. So we're now doing the Apple encryption reduction.
Yes,
it's a demi-gloss.
It's a demi-gloss where it's a very rich.
Mm-hmm.
The ones and zeros are tightly packed together now.
Right. It's a comfy. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Becky Worley. Our show today brought to you by IT Pro TV. If you are in IT, you know the most important job is to keep up to date, because this stuff moves fast. If you want to get in IT, the most important job to keep up to date and get the certs, and that's where IT Pro TV is awesome. Whether you're looking to start a career in IT or you're already in the field, getting those certs, getting those credentials are the key to getting a better job, a promotion, making more money, doing a better job. IT Pro TV was founded by IT trainers who decided that the best way to do this is like what we do here at TWIT, to do a channel broadcasting 50 hours a week. They now have two studios. They're building a new facility. Their new setup is going to have five studios. There's more than 1,000 hours of content and more coming, all streamed live or on demand worldwide. You can get on Chromecast, on Roku, on PC, on iOS, on Android. It's now available on Amazon Fire TV. They have an Apple TV channel. So you can turn on IT Pro TV on your big screen, have it going in the background, absorb all this information, get in the car, listen on the phone as you drive to work, get out of the car, put it on your PC. You're going to learn, and they are adding new courses all the time. This month, Microsoft Server 2016, the MCSE prep course, Microsoft System Center Configuration Manager. They've got courses for CCNA, Amazon Web Services. The ethical hacking course is awesome. There's the Measure Up practice exams. Those are great. $109 value. You get practice exams so you can take the test before you take the test, and that's built into your subscription. It's free. They also have virtual machine labs, which allow you to set up and configure a Windows server, set up Windows clients, all without having Windows at all. You can do it on any HTML5 browser. You can do it on a Chromebook. And the low monthly subscription price means it's affordable. It's more affordable, certainly, than going to a technical school. Probably more engaging. Certainly, all the content you need. And it's even less, really, than buying one of those prep books. Those are expensive. Well, I'm going to give you a deal to get it down to $40 a month or $399 for a year. Here's the deal. Go to itpro.tv, itpro.tv/twit. You're going to get a free 7-day trial. And when you use the code TWIT30, you're going to get 30% off, not for the first year, the first month, but forever. That's 30% off the lifetime of your account. Coming up, beginning March 21st, they're going to stream live their CCNP security courses. I know a lot of people would... our customers at IT Pro TV are interested in security. This is going to be a great course. itpro.tv/twit. Use the offer code TWIT30. Try it free for 7 days. You'll become an IT superhero with itpro.tv.
I read an article the other day about certifications that increase your salary, top 15. 14 of them were technical.
Yeah, of course.
One was program manager.
Yeah, that's not surprising. I think that really is a skill. Well, everybody knows. I mean, these are the best jobs out there, aren't they? Really? The person who runs the network has all the power. So, self-driving cars. Google has a couple of ones. They have the Lexus SUV with the LiDAR spinning and the cameras. And then they have those little cute autonomous vehicles. The cute ones don't have steering wheel. They don't have a pedal. They don't have a brake. The one that got in an accident was the one with the pedal, the brake, and a driver. And it got in a kind of a weird situation. It was in Mountain View. Google campus is there. And it was driving down a city street. And you normally, if you're going to make a right turn, you get in the rightmost lane. Except that this one had a big pothole in it. And the car comes up to the pothole, and it's coned off, and it's got sandbags. Car's stuck. Decides it's got to get merged back into traffic to get to make the right turn. So turns on its blinker, sees a bus coming, and then plows into it at 2 miles an hour. It hits the bus. It doesn't just hit the bus. It hits it in the most vulnerable portion of any bus, right there in the crotch. It's one of those
double buses.
Double extensible buses.
Really hits like in the joint. Ones.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Hits it in the joint. Mm-hmm. I don't know if there's a lot of damage. A lot of discussion about this. I don't know if the bus driver was mad. He said he saw it was a Google autonomous vehicle, and it's to be presumed that bus drivers encounter them a lot in Mountain View. The driver said, Google said, the car did see the bus, but thought it would let it in.
As did the driver.
And the driver said, yeah, I saw it. I thought, this isn't going to be a problem. I'll let the car handle it. And the bus did not let him in, and it hit the bus at 2 miles an hour. Nobody was hurt. So this is what's going on. The Google cars are getting more aggressive intentionally. The problem is, and this is a very challenging computer science problem for an autonomous vehicle. Humans have all sorts of signals about, oh, you go, I'll go. You look the driver in the eye. Does he see you? Is he slowing down? Okay, it's my turn to go. Okay, there's nothing to look at with an autonomous vehicle. It may very well be the bus driver thought, oh, it's stuck. It's just going to sit there. I don't have to let it in. It's a robot car. I don't know what the bus driver thought.
Have you ever been behind a bus, next to a bus, in front of a bus? Don't care about
we,
you.
We know that the last thing you right do is challenge my, a bus.
No, that's it. Completely right.
But a computer doesn't know that.
And that's basically what Google's press release about this said, is we're going to take this as a learning experience about treating buses and other large vehicles differently than other cars, which is like, because I try to put myself in that situation, and that's exactly what I would think. Is like, okay, I could risk getting plowed into by a bus, or I could just wait for the bus to go by, because I don't trust any bus.
Listen to this language. Google said it has reviewed this incident and, quote, thousands of variations of it on our simulator in detail.
We simulated.
Made refinements to our software, and this is the key. From now on, our cars will more deeply understand that buses and other large vehicles are less likely to yield to us than other types of vehicles.
Wow.
We hope to handle situations like this more gracefully
let
in the future.
The Wookiee
let the
Wookiee win.
Let the Wookiee win. Yeah. That's the lucky, let the Wookiee win world. I think you're right.
And they're already programmed to see things like traffic cones and know that they should be more careful. But I guess in this case, they saw the traffic cones and the sandbags, and they thought they knew a way out.
Well, they're also, the cars have been so cautious up to now that they haven't, they've actually been pushing them to be a little less cautious because they want to...
They're really cautious, yeah.
Yeah, and so we talked about this on Twig on Wednesday. The worst thing that happens, in California we have four-way stops, which have very arcane rules about who goes. I mean, if everybody arrives at a different time, that's not a problem. First person goes first. If you arrive at the same time, then it's more complicated. But the worst thing that can happen at a four-way stop is a driver who gets there first. It's his turn, who waits and goes, no, you.
Yeah, so
it's
confusing.
The most annoying, confusing, dangerous thing to do is to be too passive. And I think what Google was deciding is these cars are too passive. And that's not the best way to drive. You have to have – driving turns out to be an interaction with the other drivers. And you can't be just kind of, okay, you go. It's your turn.
Every driver has a personality. So what's the personality of the Google car?
Yeah.
Going to be.
They're trying a little to be a little more aggressive.
Also, it varies so much from region to region. A Google self-driving car in Boston needs to drive quite differently than one in Mountain View.
Well put.
Are there a that would actually be like the final exam. Can you drive in Boston?
That's where I learned how to drive when
really?
I was growing up.
Wow. Brad Templeton, who does a lot of work on autonomous vehicles, wrote a great blog post. He pointed out that in India, lanes are just a suggestion. That there, most streets don't even have lanes painted in. And if they do, no one, it's not really.
What we call a two-lane road is five lanes
yeah.
in many parts
so
of Asia.
So in many parts of the world, an autonomous vehicle is going to really have a challenge because it's going to have to impute human motives. It's going to have to kind of understand what's going on. What was that? Do you have that video, Jason, not of the San Francisco street, but of the traffic intersection in India? That we showed, it was, it gives you an idea of how hard it would be to learn how to drive unless you'd learned your whole life. It's almost like you couldn't be fluent. This is a slightly sped up. There's no roundabout. There's no markings. There's no lights. It's just negotiated. And it's negotiated in, you know, nearly real time. And by the way, it's not just cars and buses. They're people crossing the street. And I don't...
Oh, that was a good one.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch because it's like, what? The bus just went right through.
Third bus that has
It doesn't care.
Does not care.
Bus don't care.
That's really efficient. Do they have more accidents than we do?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And in fact, after I showed this video, somebody in the chat room pointed out that there are 31, something like 31 times more fatal accidents in India than there are in the United States, in the Great Britain.
Beijing has sort of been like that when I've been there as well.
Do you ever drive and count how many different things have to... grab your attention every minute. I mean, it's incredible when you actually think about the signal processing that's going on in our brains as you drive. It's unfathomable.
The human brain is uniquely well suited to this because we're massively parallel. We also are good at learning autonomous things. A lot of driving is autonomous, just like walking or running. If you thought about walking, you couldn't do it.
You'd freak out. That's,
This is why you feel it when you take a long drive, right? And you're exhausted. You feel mentally exhausted at the end. And
even though
weird,
you didn't do anything.
Because we all tend to think that unless you're doing something physical, you're not exhausting yourself. But the fact is, you're using your brain. You're on edge. Your brain is burning calories when you think a lot. Like they did a study of like people who are doing math tests or something like that. And the fact is, it's real exertion and it takes a toll. And you drive to the store for some groceries and it's not that big a deal, but you drive from San Francisco to LA and you are toast by the time you get to the end of it. So thanks self-driving cars. Maybe.
Did you ever have a bad commute? Like a long commute?
Oh yeah. I used to drive. So when I worked at Ziff Davis, actually, I was in Foster City and I lived in the East Bay. So I had a bridge commute.
Ugh.
I did go through a canyon and a bunch of city streets and over a bridge.
Did you ever
it's the worst.
Get to the end of the commute and not remember doing the commute?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Especially
that's
if
what
was
scares me. It's like I was in a blackout condition.
Or you were talking about O.J. Simpson earlier. Like I was listening to the news coverage of the trial and the white Bronco chase and all that. Or if you're listening to an audiobook or something and then you get out of the car and you're like, I don't even remember the stop signs or the street lights because I was just sort of focused on what I was listening to and the autonomous driver part of me was
right. And you hope
detached
you did it
from
right.
my brain.
So I got to go with Sebastian Thrun in the first Google car.
He's the head of Google X division.
Right, was. And that was for GMA. And it was the first press ride in the car. And we didn't know what it was going to be like. We hadn't seen any video from it. And it was a little herky-jerky and weird to see the thing moving by itself. And it was kind of scary.
Did you get in?
I got in. And then
this is the one without a steering wheel and pedals?
It was a road test. This was back probably 6.5 years ago, maybe the first one that was the Prius.
Yeah.
And then I also stepped in front of it to see if it would stop, which it did. But I just remember thinking it was this foreign entity, terrifying. And then last year at CES, I was in the BMW self-driving car in the back seat while it drove me driverless, nobody in the front seat, from point A to point B in their controlled environment. And the next time I got in a car to drive, I was disappointed. I was so easily acclimated to the idea of the technology.
No kidding. So you got used to it. It was scary at first, but you got used to it.
it was amazing how fast your brain actually assimilated to it.
Yeah, this is and the video.
Yeah, this is the one from Yahoo. I mean, there's no other human in the car with me, and I'm just
and
in
you're
the
in the back seat, so you there's nothing you could do.
No, I mean it was going tiny amounts of speed, but it was amazing how quickly your brain got used to it. I think
really,
it's happening.
So you're going to acclimate to this. This is something you can't wait to
you
sit
already
in the back
have.
Seat.
So do you have collision sensing on your car?
Yeah, I have all of that stuff. Yeah,
this is all mental. The technology is there. The laws are not there. The mental acceptance is not there, and it has to be incremental.
Can we just go back in time when there was no phone encryption? There's no self-driving cars. I just want to ride a horse.
That's the brilliance of the auto drive on the Teslas.
The horse is that knows the way home.
Is that it's incremental, right? It's not. You're still driving the car theoretically, but you press that button and it's driving for you. But you're still in the driver's seat. It's like let's get used to that for a while, and then we can sit in the back.
Yeah, I really feel like that's Elon's plan. Is he's just going to upgrade the firmware until it just does it itself.
Yeah, and then eventually you'll just be having one of these drinks in the back seat
and texting with gas at $35 a barrel right now. As an environmentalist, I am so excited for our acceptance of autonomous driving.
I prefer to have my drinks and text in the front seat.
Well, that is. You have no use for, what is it? I can't stand useful things.
I can't stand useful things.
So Frank, or whatever his name is. But yeah, I think that it's going to lead to the electric car adoption, and it's going to be, people are going to be more excited for autonomous cars.
I ordered an X. You can drive in it when it comes.
The one with the. Whoop.
Or not drive.
Or the 3. The 3 is coming. That's coming March 31st. We're going to see
pre-order is March 31st. I don't know when you'll get a car.
$25,000.
It's not unusual. It's not unusual with Tesla that you can pre-order and then 2 years later get the car.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Bring back the buggy whip for something, anyway.
Welcome to the good old days.
Google is one of the best companies to work for the 5th year running. This is from Fortune magazine. The list considers it Alphabet 100 best companies to work for. Number one is Google. Number two, Acuity Insurance in Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Okay, throw the list out. That's ridiculous.
Wegmans. No, Wegmans is on there. I love Wegmans.
Do I have to live in Sheboygan? Actually, great brats. So maybe are they including the brat factor in the overall Acuity Insurance?
Harry, are you a freelancer?
No, I'm not. Not these days.
Why Wegmans?
It's a great company.
It's a central New York institution. It's like the Costco of central New York.
Quicken Loans? Weird. What are they using for their criteria?
Well, Jason and I used to work somewhere that used to be on that last IDG.
Yes.
And
was
those
it good?
In those cases, they chose
that was Pat
certain
Robbins.
Employees within the company, and they would send us questionnaires, which I remember I got 1 year.
What did they ask you? Like,
questions
do you like
about,
it here?
Do you like it here? Or what are the benefits like? That was back when it was a little easier for a media company to get on a list like that.
Yeah.
And we had stuff like a fairly cushy profit-sharing plan at the time, which I'm sure helped.
I'm kind of fascinated right now about the freelancer versus employee question. Natalie Morris wrote a really interesting article that pointed to Veronica Belmont's amazing article about the issues. And I'm really curious. I haven't worked for a company for a long time as an employee. I have our bizarre relationship with ABC. But bottom line, what do you like about working for a company and what do you wish you had as if you were a freelancer?
Well, incredible benefits are always nice, and those are easier to get if you work for someone. Working for yourself, you have way more independence typically. I mean, my favorite types of companies to work for are ones where I feel like I'm working for myself, but I also get the benefits.
That's what it's like here, right,
smart
Jason?
Coworkers.
It's like working for yourself, but you get the benefits.
Exactly. Perfectly.
Oh, that was, God, the level of authenticity in his tone is so heartfelt.
Right you are, boss. Whatever you say, boss.
Yeah. You got it.
Jason, where's my thumbs up?
It's a little self-serving, but because I was an employee for so many years, I'm still an employee. I always kind of think about running a company as an employee and trying to make it something like, and the number one thing is control, right? Is like autonomy. And I think there are a lot of people who don't want that responsibility of figuring out what they're supposed to do and not somebody breathing down their necks. But I don't know. I try to give people that kind of situation because that's what I wanted.
I've worked for companies where the company was an obstacle to me being creative and productive.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No. And that's true of a lot of companies.
Tech TV was pretty good. We liked working there, right?
I don't know. know. I was too young to know what was really at stake.
What was normal?
Plus, I didn't have kids. You had kids. You knew.
Yeah. I was very grateful to Protect TV. Because we got a lot, mostly because we got a lot of autonomy. But then, after 6 years of working your ass off and making a great product, they go, oh, and bye, thanks. We sold it.
Well,
see,
that's the false
that's
security.
The negative of the whole right. thing is you may love it while you're there, but you know.
Well, that's a friend of mine always said, and he said he would never go indie like I did. And he had open eyes about it. He said, look, they could lay people off tomorrow, but I feel secure that I've got this job right. that I can have as long as I want it and as long as I do what they ask of me. And I don't sweat a lot of the details of working for, you know, making sure the company runs because other people sweat that. But it is kind of an illusion. I mean, your company can lay everybody off tomorrow and you lose your job. And, you know, it's just you have layers of insulation that you don't if you're working as a freelancer.
It takes a certain personality to live with the insecurity of being a freelancer. And yet I always felt a little bit more secure as a freelancer because at least I made my own destiny.
But then you have freelancer's dilemma. When it's busy, you got to make right. you while the sun shines. And right. then when it's... when it's quiet, you're panicking because it's not busy. Right.
And I'm fundamentally lazy, so it really was not a good Stop. Fit for me. I still have a job. I still collect a paycheck from my radio show.
Yeah. Well, that's the best of both worlds, actually, is when you have a gig that's consistent and yeah. then you can kind of go do the fun stuff.
And you're working for yourself and is in some ways more secure, I'd say, especially in the media business. Because if you work for somebody else, unless you are the boss, you truly don't know how well the company is doing. And if you run into trouble, somebody else may make decisions that you have no control over. And if you work for yourself, at least you know how the company is doing.
If you screw up, it's your fault.
And it's your own fault. Yeah.
We live in a golden age of media where you can also go on your own. You know,
it's a golden age unless you're a print journalist. A very
or a woman
sad,
over 50.
Or a woman over 50. That's another one. It's a. How old are you?
45.
Okay.
TikTok.
You got 5 years.
In TV. I'm working on my writing, guys. That's my radio voice.
I think
voice.
That's changed, actually. I think that's changed a lot. No, I think there are older women now in television who are not booted out just because
no,
of their
I'm
age.
I'm joking. Why do you say that about print, though? What do you think?
Did you read this article? This is Bill Moyer's website article by Dale Maharidge. What happens to journalists when no one wants to print their words anymore? And it's about the huge number of print journalists, newspaper journalists, who are older and will never get another job. They're basically, it's done for you because there aren't new newspaper jobs.
No. They just merged a bunch of the newspapers here in the Bay Area into fewer newspapers that come out less often.
In 2007, there were 55,000 full-time journalists. In fact, there's a quote in here that no matter what we do, we'll never lay anybody off. I can't remember which newspaper it was, but we'll never have to. We've never laid anybody off, and we'll never have to. There were 55,000 full-time journalists at 1,400 daily papers 8 years ago. This year, 39,000 full-time jobs, and many of those papers have folded.
Well, and that's a number from 2007. I mean, you go back to the numbers in 1990.
Right.
And you'll find that they're even more
105 newspapers closed in 2009. And what's sad is that many of these reporters and writers and editors are in their 50s and thought they would have a job for life and now really have nowhere to go. It's actually a sad article, and it's something we don't, you know, technology has its costs, and we talk a lot about jobs people have lost and businesses that no longer exist. And I imagine if you worked at Kodak, you probably don't feel too good about digital photography. But this is happening right now in journalism and in the newspaper. It's a terrible time to be in the newspaper business. Now, some of those people might do as you did, Jason. You kind of been through this.
Yeah, but it's a tiny percentage of people. I'm fortunate enough to have at least enough of an audience that I could kind of hang out my own shingle. And,
brand is the key, is
and,
to have developed
do it.
A brand.
And a lot of newspaper reporters especially aren't allowed a personality or a right. brand in public because they are supposed to be objective relayers of information. You know, we can argue about whether that was accurate or not. But if you're a big-name columnist, you can get away with it. But if you were just somebody who was grinding on the crime beat and doing a great job at the – you know, at the paper in Baltimore working on the murder beat, that job goes away. And what do you do? Does anybody even know who you are? And if you're David Simon, you can turn into writing books. But that's a bit of a crapshoot. It's like steelworkers or something like that. This is a case where you've got people who are going to have to be retrained. It's really sad. I think there are jobs for a lot of these people, but they're not journalism jobs, right? They're going to be
corporate
communications or PR or teaching or...
Or, you know, Uber.
But but it's going to require a change in lifestyle because those jobs are gone.
You know, it's really insult to injury is people who get laid off, they get a job at Uber, and then, of course, autonomous vehicles come along in a couple of years, and there's no job there either. Uh-huh. It's like almost like there's – where do you go in the new economy?
Well, have you seen CGP Gray's video about the rise of the robots, the YouTube video? It's a great video, but
sounds
basically –
like a real lively
– it's a hilarious. CGP Gray is this guy. He makes YouTube videos. He is brilliant, and they're very entertaining and educational videos. But he made the case, and it's so depressing. It's basically, what can't robots and computers replace us for in terms of jobs? And this is maybe a 21st century question, is what if – most of the jobs we do are more efficiently done by a computer and or a robot. At what point is there no employment left? And what do we do then? Do we all just hang out? The big winner
at the launch festival that we were talking about earlier was a robotic barista machine that, I mean, baristas, like, talk about one of the last entry-level jobs out there that's going to be replaced.
CNET's entry into fiction this week was called The Last Taco Truck in Silicon Valley.
Yes.
And it was such a great read. This is kind of a sidebar, but I think it's worth that concept of we're really talking about transitional economies and the speed at which this transition is happening.
Yeah.
It's a great read.
And the real human cost of it.
Yep.
If we lose the baristas, if we lose the
taco-ristas, who would we actually talk to? You know, we'll be in VR. We'll be in virtual reality worlds. We'll all just be sitting on our couches in VR.
Yeah.
It'll be WALL-E so fast. Mm.
If you can afford a WALL-E machine.
Was it $600 for the...
The Vive? $799.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I got mine, so I'm ready. I'm going to watch Seinfeld and drink Soylent.
Okay, what's the take on VR? Yes? Going to happen big, Harry?
Yes, big. I'd say if you're sure how long it will take, you might be wrong. But I don't think there's a way in which it doesn't matter at all.
Jason?
Big in gaming soon. Big in the rest of the world outside of gaming a little bit later. And then I feel like there's the augmented reality stuff on top of that that could
be
big.
Very excited about that.
Could be big in terms of not having to carry around a phone to get an overlay on the world.
I have yet to... use a VR visor without getting a little queasy. And I think that's a large portion of society. Do you think we'll get over that?
I went for the longest time having no problem at all. And then the last couple of times I used Oculus, I did get a little queasy. I discovered that for some reason standing up makes me less queasy than sitting down.
See, a technology that makes you throw up. I think there's some problems. You know, there's some bugs you got to work out.
If you can make the frame rate high enough and the resolution high enough and do eye tracking and, you know, you would think that you'd be able to get it
I think that there may be a barrier there. You know, when we saw the Segway this is going to revolutionize cities until people realized you looked like a giant dork in it. And that killed it.
Right.
That was it. That was all it took.
Motion control rides like Star Tours make me queasy.
Yeah.
So it may just be that there's a percentage of the population that can't do it.
I've been a huge naysayer, and I don't see the technology or the iterative sort of issues around this. I think we can work through it. But I've seen the use case I'm struggling with it. Obviously, gaming is huge. Porn is massive.
Not that massive.
Donald Trump says it's really big.
No, he says there's no problem.
No problem. But I love some of the really specific use cases. I was thinking back to, I went to this weird trade show about 10 years ago.
Have you used
police
porn
officers.
VR?
No.
I have. So if you ever want to know, I'll tell you.
Well.
Actually, I'll bring it in for you next time you're here.
Well, tell us.
You should take a look at it.
Okay. I'm going to ask you quantitative questions. 10% better than regular porn? 20, 30, 40? 100% better. Really?
Well, at least initially, because you're in it.
When do you ever take your eyes away from what you're looking at
in
porn anyways?
You can look around.
What are you going to look? Is it all around you?
Yeah,
you're going to look at are you admiring the molding on the ceiling?
All around you. Actually,
are you looking at the pizza box that the pizza guy brought on the floor?
Yes.
What's happening?
Yes, that's true. You want to see, it's not,
it's
sometimes
about,
you
it's
go.
It's about atmosphere, Leo.
Sometimes you go, well, this is a nice apartment. That's an interesting choice of paint.
I'm not queuing any of that footage up.
Man. Wow, where's the censored
Jason, you're the one who introduced me to it.
I
don't deny it because he was the first one to have a visor in the house.
Wow.
And he said, "Leo, wait a minute, you want to see something?" And
are you throwing me under the bus here?
Yeah.
Is it an automated bus?
No,
here,
right? Now you can sue him. Isn't there some...
No, it was a research project. Yeah. Both of us were engaged in because we need... This is a part of the conversation.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We review products. We've got to know about this. Everything that... Okay. Yeah, sure. All aspects.
Okay. So 100% better.
VHS went into beta.
Well, it depends what you're looking for.
Right.
If you're looking for decor ideas... no, it's very, you know what, it's, yes, it's immersive, right? And isn't it, after all, what you're looking for, whether it's in gaming or in video or porn, you're looking for an experience that's as close to reality as possible. Right. Well, imagine something that makes you feel like you're more part of the action, so to speak.
Okay, I buy that. Now, my other case scenario that was far more, that was kind of interesting. I really never thought about that it would be that much better, but I
don't know if this is true, but it's often said that the adult industry drives technologies, that online payments happen because of the adult industry. That,
so are they saying
that home video?
VHS succeeded because of, and laser discs conversely failed because they didn't have adult content. So I don't know if that's true. I think sometimes that's overblown, so to speak. But I think that in this case, there might be some truth in it, that many people may come to it from... because of adult content. At least having that there is going to be an introduction for some people. But more so than having the New York Times send it out with the Sunday Times and pictures of homeless people.
No, don't care about that. I saw a really interesting use case for pain management, where burn victims were using it to distract them from their...
Well, that's the point. It's more realistic.
There's the one use case. I went to this police and firearms training trade show many years ago. They had a full 360-degree simulator for first responders in active shooter situations.
Absolutely.
And you had to figure out which door, as it opened, had the mom holding the baby or the shooter with the gun.
Right. And I think just for gaming alone.
But training situations. I mean, for pilots, we're already seeing that in all the simulators.
Yeah, VR simulation for flying is actually very... popular, but it's happening, absolutely.
Speaking of someone who does a lot of conference calls, I'm excited about it for collaboration.
Yeah, imagine that. The new studio we're building, we're considering where we're going to put the 360-degree camera.
I would much rather
We'd be foolish not to, right?
I'd rather see my colleagues in New York and be able to look around the conference table just like they can.
In a way, that's the interesting thing. It's immersive, but not in the way you think, like it's an overwhelming experience. It's a more normal experience. So a lot of times you do just kind of look around, you're in the space, so it isn't necessarily more vivid of experience. It's more a natural experience.
Also, it will get less ridiculous looking over time.
That's the problem.
At some point, it will look,
you all look
more
idiotic.
Like eyeglasses.
Maybe
the technology will get better.
We talked about this last week. Nobody looks good when they're in a VR environment. The rest of the world looks at you like you're complete idiot.
I love this movie VR situation that they had in Germany last week. Right. And they all go in, they sit down in these swivel chairs, they put on the VR headsets, they look around the headsets
and
as they're
weirdly
watching.
Mark Zuckerberg appears. It's the strangest
walking
thing.
Walking down the aisle.
He walks down the aisle and says, "I own you." I think VR is both exciting, and I think there are still some potential challenges, including the nausea factor that can't be overlooked.
And the social aspect is never going to be overcome.
It's also very hard to... Yeah, the social aspect. Remember, looking like a dork was what killed the Segway. And
Google Glass.
You can't demo it. You have to go try it.
Yeah.
You can't just look at a video on YouTube and say, "Oh, I like this. I want to try this." You have to actually physically put on a dorky-looking toaster.
It's the worst television. I can't do any segments about it.
Right.
Right.
And Microsoft keeps showing off...
Look how dorky these people look. We're watching the German group watching a movie, and it just, they look like, talk about WALL-E.
It's total WALL-E.
Yeah, but there was a time when walking down the street using a cell phone also looked really dorky, and if society wants something over time, it stops looking dorky. I'm not saying that they will.
No, we can overcome
this. But if it's compelling enough, it won't matter eventually.
My thesis with Google Glass was, though, that the fundamental connection to other humans is eye to eye. And when you put something between two humans, that obscures that connection.
Well, it depends what you put between them.
Which direction were you looking?
And that's a little less of an issue with VR than AR. AR, if you're also interacting with humans, who actually are there with you, that's much more of a problem.
I do like AR. I think AR has the opportunity to become the next user interface for technology.
Mixed reality.
Period. Mixed reality. Yeah, I like that better.
Yeah, that's what Paul said.
That's the new term, mixed reality.
Oh, mixed.
The fact that VR is starting out with gaming, I think, is generally helpful because when you're playing games, you're already sort of in a natural context.
And you want it to be as immersive as possible, right. And you're usually playing, you know, those kind of high-end games by yourself at your computer anyway. So, yeah, and gamers want any edge they can for it to be more immersive. So I think it'll be a hit there. I think you're absolutely right, though, that what happens after that? How do you get beyond those first obvious VR instances to something that everybody wants? You know, people didn't even want to buy 3D glasses to watch 3D TV.
Did you see this Quartz story about how a inkjet printer can be used to fool a fingerprint reader? Mm-hmm. You can literally print. I mean, at Mobile World Congress, somebody was doing it with Play-Doh, but this is an inkjet printer. They can actually print your fingerprint on a piece of paper and unlock a phone. This is Michigan State that did the research. Boy, talk about, you know, privacy problems. Hey, let's take a break. We want to talk about some more things. We're almost done. The bourbon's running out, so so are we. But first, a little bit of a word about my favorite bookstore. It's not a bookstore you can go into and walk around in VR yet, although I wouldn't be surprised if someday it was. It's a bookstore you listen to. It's Audible.com, 180,000 titles across all types of literature, fiction, nonfiction, periodicals even, performances, comedy. I am a huge Audible fan, have been since those days when I had to drive 2 hours each way to Tech TV. That's when I first became an Audible subscriber in the year 2000. And, man, I have several hundred books now in my Audible library. It's one of the things I like about Audible is that those books are yours. They're in your library, your virtual library, and you can go back and listen to them. I'm listening. What am I listening to right now? I got the Alexander Hamilton biography because I'm getting ready to go to see Hamilton by Ron Chernow. Really, really good. Mm-hmm. Did you listen to The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up by Marie Kondo, Becky? I feel like you might be a Marie Kondo.
I am familiar with her work, and I have touched all my things to decide if they give me joy or not.
Do they spark joy? What are you listening to these days, Jason Snow?
Well, I've got one to recommend that's on Audible. It's called Luna, New Moon by Ian MacDonald. Really good. Probably going to be one of the best sci-fi novels of the year. Probably going to win some awards, certainly be nominated. Ian MacDonald, great writer. Been nominated for Hugos and Nebulas and stuff before. And this is described, I think it's in production to possibly be a TV series, described as Game of Thrones on the moon.
Oh, that's my two favorite things.
It's pretty great. The moon and Game of Thrones. Yeah, it's pretty great. It's or you might describe it as Dallas on the moon. It's a kind of family dynasties battling each other. And it's a lot of fun. Really fun book.
I'm listening to Neal Stephenson's latest, which is also about the moon, Seven Eves. Although in this one, the book starts by the moon being destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little more of a downer than Luna New
Moon.
But the moon stays around.
Towards the end, you get 5,000 years in the future. Things turn around.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's actually great. I love Seven Eves. Here's the deal. I'm going to get you two books. Go to audible.com/twit. Twit and the number 2, and you'll sign up for the Platinum account. That means 2 books a month, but your first month's free. You also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. Cancel any time in the first 30 days. You'll pay nothing, but those books, as always, are yours to keep forever. So pick well, Padawan learner, and get sucked in by Audible because it's a great addiction. I am. And that's a really good example of driving and not knowing you drove, but you feel. But what's really interesting to me is when does this happen to you when you're listening to an Audible book? If you re-listen to a passage, you can remember where you were.
Oh, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
That's such a weird
called positional memory. Yeah, yep. And it's a real thing.
It's when I run, I go by certain trees. I'm like, oh, I remember this was the part where.
So weird. The human brain is bizarre. it happens to me all the time. I'm listening to an Audible passage and I'll know, or vice versa. You go to that place and you hear that passage again. It's great. I love Audible. Then one of the things I like about Audible is often I can't remember, did I see the movie or just listen to the book? Because it really comes alive in your head. And sometimes it's a better movie, frankly, than the movie.
It's great when you can cast any actor of any time and in any role.
Yeah.
I put every story in my grandparents' farmhouse.
Really?
Like, oh, not everyone, but, you know, that's like interesting. A lot of them. You place your own.
Yeah. You kind of see that place. Yeah. How interesting. Is that in Hawaii?
Upstate New York.
Upstate New York.
Right near Wegmans.
You know, that's a great place to work, I hear.
I hear.
Audible.com/twit2. Your first two books are free. Go get them. Go get them. Well, this looks good. If, you know, people are sad because Downton Abbey's wrapping up. How about a book called Servants, A Downstairs History of Britain? So you could kind of hear the fact behind, you know, the great house, the great estate. Do you watch Downton Abbey? You gasped. I know. Don't make that sound. I don't know. Don't do it. I'll make me cry. That's the last. It's over.
I know.
Is that tonight, the last one?
Helen, or who's the woman who plays the dowager? Maggie Smith.
I love Maggie Smith.
She was on Fresh Air this week saying how much she hates it when people ask her for selfies with her. poor famous
of course she
people
does.
Now.
Of course she does. Last episode is tonight, and we won't see them again except if PBS decides to bring it back because it was such a huge money raiser.
British TV is always good at bringing back casts like 10 years later for the Christmas special, right? They do that all the time, so I wouldn't be surprised if they do that with Downton. If there's money to be made, if there's actors to be paid.
Romania is not a third world nation, and they would like you to know that. Apparently, Bernie Sanders tweeted today, people living in Bucharest, Romania, have access to much faster internet than most of the U.S. That's unacceptable and must change. I think he's referring to how bad our internet is.
Yeah.
But folks in Bucharest did not take kindly to it. Romania is sorry, somebody tweeted, for not being the third world country you and your voters think it is. We'll be more careful next time.
They usually pick on Estonia for this one. So right. I think it's interesting they shifted to Romania.
Estonia is amazing. It's like the wireless
South Korea,
capital of the world.
Estonia.
And Kazakhstan was busy with our astronauts, so we couldn't pick on them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
So Romania got it.
Yeah.
Europe is not taking our anymore after this Trump debacle.
That's right.
They're rethinking their relationship with
JC
us.
Tweets, Bernie Sanders, give it a Bucharest.
Zing.
Zinga. Okay. So we now know. Don't mock Romania. No, but watch, Donald Trump will do it. No problem.
You can pick almost any country, any industrialized country, and it's got better internet than the United States.
That's what's really the sad.
For wireless, we're doing okay, but for wired, we're not in good shape.
Yeah.
That's that thing I talked about when you invented it, you have the legacy history. But I'll think our regulatory environment kind of killed it too.
The lack of competition, you mean?
The duopoly system, did not work well.
Hey, what do you think of this? Sorry, I'm coming out of left field. What do you
hosting
think about
the show
all
again.
This? I know, I can't help myself.
Show, please do.
This Google please. Exemption for radio waves in the desert. Have you heard about this?
No.
All right.
I don't even understand what that
could
mean.
You go on to the next story, and I'm going to
Google is exempted for radio waves in the desert.
I'm going to look this up because I was...
I see you have Meerkat is pivoting because, you can't really compete against Periscope. And by the way, Periscope's not doing all that well anyway. Users who click... I saw this. This got passed around on Facebook, and I thought, well, this is a scam. Users who click like on Facebook could unwittingly be aiding online scammers. Huh? Turns out... And you'd think Facebook would be nipping this one in the bud. People put up benign posts of little kitty cats and stuff, gets lots of likes, and then change it to be spam.
Oh.
It seems like you shouldn't be able to keep your likes if you change your post. But apparently you can.
After some period of... I mean, this is why people always ask, why can't you edit Twitter posts? And it's the same reason. It does open up abuse. I see a lot of forums where you can edit your post for like 20 minutes or something, some short period of time where you've got regret or you found a typo, but not have it be, you know, hours later after you've got a million likes, then you turn it into an ad.
Right. Or worse, malicious content.
Yeah, you know? Terrible.
Remember Social Cam?
Yeah, Social Cam.
Huge anaconda that had supposedly eaten someone, and they took over your Facebook feed and were posting...
Really? Wow.
Luckily, I wasn't hallucinating. Google has applied, according to an FCC document unearthed by Hackaday, for an experimental radio license to be built in the New Mexico desert, much redacted, but it's anticipated that this has to do with Google's Project Skybender to bring internet by drone.
What could go wrong?
100,000-watt transmitter. That's a big-ass transmitter.
So internet by drone.
But nobody lives in the desert, do they?
Right. But this was, I mean, a lot of companies have looked at this sort of low Earth orbiting wireless. Harry, are you buying any of this?
Well, Facebook is also doing that. They're using lasers.
Oh, much better.
What could go wrong?
Use lasers.
Yeah, they're also doing drones. And the idea is they can go to like a little village in Africa, maybe, that's rather distant from the existing infrastructure and just shoot down internet. So,
and that's the Google whole project with the balloons.
Yes,
is similar.
Loon is the same idea, but Google is also trying drones along with the Loon balloons.
I'm one known fairly well for wasting money on Kickstarter deals. My most recent, of course, the floating bonsai tree. It was funded, so I'm hoping to get that. But here's one that is interesting. Did you put this in, Jason? Is this what you were talking about? The virtuality mind-blowing anatomy adventure.
Yes.
They're looking to raise $100,000 for a T-shirt that lets you see inside somebody's body. What?
It's an for educational app. Purposes.
It's for kids. Educational purposes
for
only.
Yeah.
Okay. They've raised $44,000. Halfway there. 24 days to go.
If you shuttle ahead in the video, you'll get to the...
Yeah, shuttle ahead. So the idea is there's something on your T-shirt, like some code.
Like an anchor point, and then...
Yeah, and then you use one of these Mattel 3D things and virtual... This is actually augmented reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the app is free. So they want to make these T-shirts, and you point the phone at somebody, and you can see their stuff. I think this Mattel viewer is actually very cool.
I am so skeptical as a parent. You know I'm like quasi-Waldorf with my kids. They get no Minecraft. They're going to sue me.
Oh, give them Minecraft.
They can have code.org to their heart's
content. No. You're missing the point. Minecraft, in fact, if there's something wrong with Minecraft, it is really a secret attempt to teach kids programming and logic and building and construction.
It's a creative tool.
It is the best stealth educational tool I've ever seen. You are depriving your children.
Oh, that's like saying send them to Vegas so they can learn math.
No. You don't understand. I'm telling you. You don't get it.
It.
No, you don't get it. Come into my server and join me and we'll build some things together. Uh-huh. It is actually, the more I use it, the more I realize that Minecraft really is actually teaching you to be an engineer.
That's teaching you. But that's like handing a bottle of tequila to a 7-year-old.
Oh, no, you're
They don't
wrong.
Have the off button for it yet. That's my biggest
problem.
They
don't need an off button.
They
should
being
spend
the bad
every
guy.
Hour they can playing Minecraft.
Okay, clearly we have a disagreement.
I'm glad I'm not married to you.
You're right.
Leo has left me behind in my pro
Enjoy
Minecraft
your
argument.
Virtual porn.
Be glad that they're playing Minecraft and not Call of Duty or something like that. I would agree with you on that.
Wow, the bar is low. No.
Minecraft's awesome. I think
it is.
I think you're missing the point of Minecraft.
I do agree that I'm a little bit prescriptive, but
do you let them play with Legos?
Oh, totally.
Minecraft's like
Minecraft
better Legos.
Except it's two dimensions, and there are no other humans.
No, it's not two dimensions. You think it's two dimensions, and there's plenty of other humans.
That's the beauty of it. Is it's your kids and their friends playing together in a 3D collaborative space. It's pretty awesome.
It's actually it's preparing them for their future world.
Yeah,
when they are flipping burgers in 20 years, I'm going to owe you a bottle of bourbon.
The robots will be flipping the burgers in 20 years.
Got that? Yeah. It teaches them engineering.
By the way, burger flipping. I've done many of those.
Worked at McDonald's for years. That was my first job, and I learned a lot about work.
Yeah, I bust dishes, so I didn't actually flip the burgers, but I
bust dishes. Oh, yeah. At Denny's.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I enjoyed working at Denny's, actually. You know what? Any job that teaches you to work and work hard is a good thing for a young person. Yeah. And both Denny's and McDonald's were hard work.
Oh, yeah.
Food service is hard work.
What do you think? Are my kids going to have, like, summer jobs that they'll be able to do? Will there be any?
No, they should do Minecraft. You're just missing the whole point.
They could build Minecraft houses and then sell them.
Right. They'll make money on Minecraft.
What? One of our viewers makes his living building Minecraft things for companies.
Wow. Okay. I got to profile him.
It's
for
a skill.
He'd be good.
I should bring you to the Twit Minecraft server and you can see what people are doing.
Send me some data. I need to be converted clearly.
It teaches you engineering. It teaches you teamwork. Mm-hmm. It teaches you design, art.
All right.
I mean, in moderation, it's a great thing.
No moderation. That's your mistake.
That's my point. They have no off switch.
No moderation. Well, they should. No, moderation is a fool's
paradise.
No, mom
has to off switch every other thing.
There's a plug in the wall. You can pull it.
No, it's charged.
Look at this house. This is. You there's books on the bookshelf. There's beds. This is
you
a
have
beautiful.
Fire.
This is there's
house.
A fire. It's a beautiful home.
That is
Let's
lovely.
Go downstairs.
All of
there's
this
no electricity
designed
in Minecraft.
Built.
It's all off the grid.
Wow, that's your virtual space in there with the dungeony thing.
No. Look at there's horses. There's chickens.
Look at that town.
There's cows. This there's is a little farm.
You know, this is. It was like 7 years ago that you had your game that you played that was like this. Remember that you. Were
this is Farmville like 100 times better.
No, it wasn't even Farmville. What was the one?
The Simpsons Tapped Out, the one where I bought a lot of donuts. Kate, that I don't recommend your children play. That they should not play. But this is a game that teaches you engineering skills, and it really gets you ready for programming because. In fact, if you want to learn programming, a lot of kids are getting Raspberry Pis with Minecraft on it and Force. And you can learn, you can write a program to build this house. Whoops, I'm sorry, I just killed your door.
I like the Raspberry Pi idea. I want my son to learn how to build.
Well, you know what the best thing to do on a Raspberry Pi is? Play Minecraft.
I'm leaving now. Taking my bourbon and I'm going home to my children who are deprived and reading books right now.
Look, you said there's no one in here. Daniel just came in to say hi. Where are you, Daniel?
Oh my
hi, Lord. Daniel.
Daniel
Where are
can't
you
give you a
to?
Hug.
Don't run away.
No, it's
we're saying hi to Daniel. Hi, Daniel.
But it's a safe place.
It's a safe place
I thought
for me
this
and
was
Daniel.
Knitting today. I didn't realize
we
this
can
was
build
tech
stuff.
News today.
Yeah.
Look at that building.
Look,
there.
We're jumping this together. He's jumping. I'm jumping. That's Minecraft for hello.
Look at the municipal light services they learn about.
This is City Hall. We built City Hall here. Look at this.
Like
the giant Twit logo on the floor.
Tapestry.
So convincing, Leo. You've got me. You nailed it. You're right.
I'm following Daniel up to his special room.
Modern day lighting.
Yeah. Yeah. It's cool, isn't it, Daniel? Yeah.
Daniel's coming at you.
ADA requirements. Look at the size of the hallway there. It's perfectly ADA approved.
This is all ADA approved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look at that. Isn't that gorgeous? Oh, no, I'm going to fall off. Oh!
Physics.
Hole in the ground. Okay. See? We learn.
Wow.
We learn here.
Yep.
At Twit.
Boy.
Thank you, Daniel.
Converted.
General Tab in the chat room says, get the hell out of my house. All right. We're done here.
Clearly.
Becky, great to see you. I'm sorry. You opened that bottle of wine. We didn't even touch it.
That's not a problem.
Let's
There's a cork.
Let's get the after show now. It's time for the after show. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you guys. I had so much fun.
Where can we find more
you?
Becky Worley? Because everybody wants more Becky
Worley.
Oh,
I'm on Good Morning America. I decided that instead of plugging what I do, I wanted to let everybody know that you no longer drive at 10 and 2 because of airbags. We drive at 8 and 4.
I was shocked to learn that.
Like the pros do, yeah.
See? Yeah. And you can get this useful information like that at B Worley on Twitter, but I just thought I wanted to share something useful.
Or in my Tesla, we drive like this.
Hands free.
Watch out for buses.
Thank you so much, Jason. Always great to see you. Jason lives just down the road, so we'd like to get him up here whenever we can.
It's usually just you and me and a couple of monitors, so
Love
this has
that.
Been great to have
nice.
All human panel.
Yeah.
The robots will replace us all eventually, but...
Yeah, what the heck. We'll survive. Jason is at sixcolors.com. Yeah. Great site if you want to keep up on Mac news, Apple news of all kinds, but also he does a great series of podcasts, many podcasts.
So many podcasts.
Theincomparable.net is a good place to start.
Theincomparable.com.
I keep saying .net. Like you couldn't get the incomparable.com.
I used to work with Jason, but I hear you more often now than when we work together because as I'm working, I'm often listening to you.
That's great. People don't know this, but Harry and I are the original Mac and PC because we were the editors of Macworld and PC World back in the day. Not as cool as Justin Long and John Hodgman, but still, that was a long time ago.
He just threw bread at me.
Leo's playing Minecraft, people.
I'm sorry.
Pay no attention.
Let me eat some of that delicious bread. See how that tastes. Yeah, you made that yourself, huh, JH? All right. Harry McCracken is a technologizer on Instagram. Twitter, too?
Twitter, I'm Harry McCracken.
Okay. And, of course,
FastCompany.com is where most of my stuff is.
That's where you can read his great writing. And it's great to have you, too.
We love having a live show like this. It's so much fun. Yeah, thank you all for being here. Thanks to our live studio audience, too. They all they have to do is show up, and we'll put out a chair for them. But it's nice if you email tickets at twit.tv. Let us know. That way we make sure there's room for everybody who wants to be here. If you can watch live, you can do that as well on our streams. We do the show 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 2300 UTC on Sunday afternoon. If you can't watch live, on-demand audio and video is always available at our website, twit.tv, or wherever you get your podcasts, including apps on every platform, Apple TV, Roku, iOS, Android, even Windows Phone. Yes, we have Windows Phone apps, thanks to our great third-party developers like Dimitri Leon. Thank you for being here. I will see you next time. Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye.